Welcome to Art Bell Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from June 8th, 2001.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be across the cosmos out there in the world and beyond. Commercially, from the island of Guam in the west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole. And worldwide, of course, on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM. And I'm Art Bell, and I'd like to welcome new radio stations, new affiliates, new blood, WTCD in Indianola, Mississippi, 96.9 on the FM dial, 40,000 watts, that's a big one, WTCD FM in Indianola. Also, WTNM in Oxford Water Valley, Mississippi, 105.5 on the dial with six big ones, and WFMM FM in Hattiesburg, Sumrall, Mississippi, 97.3, again six big ones, 6,000 watts. I want to say hi to Paul Galtelli, I believe it is, Vice President, General Manager, John Winfield, the Ops Director there, and remind all of you that we're getting that close to 500 affiliates. In addition to that, we have pre-feeds every night. 3 hours of the previous night's program are available for any radio station that cares for the ratings and any listeners who would like to listen. And of course, you can urge your radio station to perhaps try and pick up the refeeds. 3 hours every night before the live show begins, as it does now. Boy, have I got something for y'all. Now, with anything that's sent to you anonymously, you have no way of knowing, of course, the validity of it. But I must tell you that I have in my hot little palm, and available for you on my website right now, one of the best UFO videos I've ever seen. It's entitled Video, UFO Video from North Bay, Ontario. Oh, you have got to see this. It's from Mark Hutchins, and it was shot supposedly about 3 years ago near North Bay, Ontario. The website which originally had this, says Mark, is no longer operating. If it's a fake, it's a good one. I agree, Mark. If it's a fake, it's a good one. This one is awesome. I mean, it's really awesome, folks. Even the sound is awesome. And there is sound with this, so if you have Windows Media Player, or it can be done on Real Player as well. Don't forget to turn up the sound. Pretty wild stuff on my website right now. And I don't know that I can really get close enough to my speakers to play you the sound that goes with this. But I guess I could try. The microphone really isn't oriented that way.
You feel that? I've got it, yeah.
Saucer's coming. Right overhead. Right overhead. That's the sound from it. It's obviously a British voice as you listen to it a few times. But this one's awesome. I mean, if it's, as he points out, if it's a fake, it's really, really, really a good one. You can see the saucer clearly. It has structure. It's obviously a flying saucer, period. I mean, it has structure. It has detail. And it's all in a moving video. And it comes right over the cameraman's head. My, is it a good one? A really good one. May not be real. You never know. It's that good. You're going to go, it's too good. You know, that's what people do. And speaking of videos, there is a second case that we're going to talk about here in a moment. Maybe you've seen the news on the BBC. It was front page over there, entitled UFO Video Goes to Hollywood. A Derbyshire housewife has sold what she says is a video of a flying saucer to a Hollywood producer, Sharon Rowlands, 44, from the village of Bosnell in the Peak District, has reportedly been paid 20,000, they say pounds, but it's dollars, for the footage. And officials at NASA are said to have been asked to examine the tape because they believe it shows the same type of craft once spotted by the space agency's own cameras during a space shuttle mission. Ms. Rowlands said that she took the film with a camcorder after hearing an eerie noise outside her home one evening in October of last year. She says she filmed the object while it hovered in the sky about 2 miles away. And I'm reading from the BBC report, which we've got on my website right now. And now, in addition to that, who, you might ask, did she sell it to? Well, she sold it to the man that I've got on the line right now, Robert Kiviat. Robert Kiviat, we've had on before. He came to Burbank, California in 1992 after writing a cover article for Omni magazine about the face on Mars, producing a high-profile mystery for Geraldo Rivera's nationally syndicated TV show Now Can Be Told. Robert was seeking the largest viewing audience and finest production value for his many exclusive stories, and agreed to move from New York and join NBC's Unsolved Mysteries. After his Canadian UFO landing, video-driven story led the NBC show to a whopping 16.5 rating, oh my God, / 25 share on February 3rd of 93. The network's on-air promo department utilized many of Robert's stories to promote the series' episodes. By the mid-1990s, Fox Network brought Robert in to help establish credibility for a new show called Encounters, and it was shortly thereafter that Robert scooped other journalists by securing exclusive rights to the alien autopsy footage and North American television coverage. NBC ironically passed on Robert's alien autopsy project, but you'll recall Fox eagerly picked it up and jump-started their reality TV specials department with the airing of Alien Autopsy Fact or Fiction on August 28th of 95, unprecedented Fox ratings, full-page article in Time magazine, an enormous amount of other media buzz led Fox to pick up a succession of widely watched primetime TV specials from Robert, including Alien Autopsy, Fact or Fiction, Miracles and Visions, Fact or Fiction, Prophecies of the Millennium, UFOs, The Best Evidence Ever Caught on Tape, World's Greatest Hoaxes, Secrets Finally Revealed, Ghosts Caught on Tape, Fact or Fiction, and UFOs, The Best Evidence Ever Caught on Tape. So, now, now Robert has again secured what nobody else could get, a very special tape from Great Britain that the BBC ran as front page, right at the top of the newscast type news. So, but we've got a link to this article, the BBC, which you can read now on my website. In a moment, Robert Kiviat will actually explain to us all why he forked over 20 grand for this film. Well, at moments of high drama, very high drama in the past, like the alien autopsy, and just all kinds of high drama in the UFO world, the man behind it has been Robert Kiviat, as he is now behind something brand new, and he's always been kind enough to come here and usually give us a little sneak preview of what he just got in the bag. And this time, he's really got one in the bag. Robert, welcome to the program.
Oh, good to be with you, Art. How are you?
I'm fine. My. I should have figured it was you. I had no idea who had purchased. I went, wow, this must be good stuff for somebody to pay 20 grand. And I thought, I wonder who did this. And then somebody mentioned your name. So you gave this lady 20 grand, huh?
Well, what seems to have happened is, and it's one of those things that something from our general research development area in our company, and Kiviat Productions, my company, we were researching for many, many stories of the phenomena kind for a series that we're developing called Could It Be True? Mm-hmm. And in this series, we're literally going to separate the fact and fiction or fiction from all the great cases that may well be true proof of either UFOs, phenomena, whatever the category I think a lot of people call it paranormal, but I don't even understand that term because I came in as a journalist for Omni magazine and for TV in general, and to me, a journalist is looking for a great story. It doesn't really matter whether or not it's UFOs or...
Okay, this is not the paranormal, or at least I don't
think
it is.
I don't even understand what that term means, and I've heard people call paranormal TV and put my shows in those categories, but even the X-Files, I mean, I'm not sure what would be paranormal TV, but anyway, we were developing this series, and we're doing our general covering the beat of UFOs, which is one of our big beats of all the phenomena we cover, and sure enough, we came across this videotape. Now, this videotape probably, and the main reason that the British press picked it up as a huge story, I don't think is about the licensing, and again, what people are keying on is the supposed license fee of what this woman who shot the video will earn for letting the broadcasters of the world, including me if I break it exclusively, which now I am in position to do, I don't think that's that big a deal, because if you break it down per minute of how long of a clip this is, it's not really that much money, Art. What we're really talking about is how great is the video? And that's the
issue. Bob, how great is the video?
Okay, so when we talk about UFO videos, and you and I have talked even today about the one you mentioned at the top of your show.
The one I've got, yes.
They could be amazing visual spectacles, but the issue is going to be like in a courtroom. Where did the video come from? Does it have a provenance? Can we track it? Can we meet the people who allegedly shot it? And maybe did they manufacture it? And so what I get a kick out of are these cases that have no provenance, or the provenance is so sketchy that if it was a painting in an art museum, you would laugh the owners or the alleged owners out of the room.
Sure.
But still, we in the media, and especially journalists, tend to look kind of down our noses at cases like these. And then we, you know, I'm not saying myself, by the way, I'm saying in general, I kind of tend to go the other direction, and my staff does as well.
Actually, I look down my nose at most, 99% of what's sent to me never sees my website. Mm-hmm. The only ones that I put up are the ones where, and still I don't know, it could be a total fake, but the ones where I go, oh my God. Yeah. when I do that, I know it has to go up.
And usually the ones we've noticed is that we go, oh my God, about are the ones that come in anonymously, that nobody wants to stand behind. And let's face it, if you shot a video of what might be an extraterrestrial spacecraft from God knows where, you're not going to be silent and anonymous about it. I mean, if you happen to get one like this woman shot it,
yes,
which is a perfect, if there might be a perfect scenario, this might be the perfect scenario. There was a wave of UFO activity over this part of England toward the later part of last year. And at the time of this UFO wave, not unlike Gulf Breeze, not unlike other places here in the United States, Mexico City for one.
Right.
That's not the United States, obviously, but other parts of this continent and the lower part of it. We have seen waves of activity. And so this was just like that, and nobody had yet captured during the wave anything on tape. And sure enough, this woman captured on tape what might be the best visual evidence of a structured craft appearing to come close to her, look at her, give her a good look, and then go back and come forward and go back.
All right. Bob, everybody who's got a computer is going to be able to see the craft or whatever it is in a still photograph that we've got a link up to right now. But that's all we can see. What you have is a video that, what, lasts about how long?
Well, it's 6.5 minutes.
Oh, that's pretty long.
And what has to be kept in mind about the video, this is just one of those things where she had, you can tell just by the way she shot it, not only have we researched it and met the woman, but of course you can hear the reality of it just by watching it. And there she appears to be just happenstance. She had the video camera fairly close by, noticed something out the window or out her front door, got outside, stood there, shot the thing not knowing what she's looking at, and it all takes place in that 6.5 minutes right on recorded video, so there's no question what we're looking at. Now, the problem seems to be with cases like these, some experts will say, well, the camera can create very strange shapes when it's struggling to see and make focus or focus a bright light in the distance.
Mm.
And when you take all the issues into account, you realize this is a light that appears out of nowhere, appears to come right at her and shine or display, whichever you may want to call it.
What is the best guess about its altitude at the closest and its size at the largest?
Hard to say, and those are all the issues that we're dealing with, but if you look at the video, it looks like it's coming right on top of her.
Oh, yeah.
It shoots very close to her and then seems to drop back, but it shows the same pulsing color pattern, changing a little bit here and there, colors definitely, but as it gets smaller, it maintains its form, and if it was indeed an in-camera artifact of some kind, you would not see that. So all the experts that we've shown it to so far believe that it is literally what you see.
All right, what about NASA? Bob, NASA, and I've seen a craft like this before. And I think you've seen a craft like this before, haven't you?
Again, I don't want to come on the show tonight and act utterly sensational and start saying things that sound like an X-file or, you know, due respect to Chris Carter. I don't think he can make this up. So let's get right to the point you're saying. Last year on Fox, we had a show called UFOs, The Best Evidence Ever Caught on Tape, number 2.
That's right.
Based on the success of the first one and a lot of other things, they did a second one during their May sweeps. And in that show, we premiered It had been on the internet a little bit, but it was a videotape shot by NASA, or better yet, a live event sent down to the Earth where one of their satellites had a malfunction, and the cameras are watching it float off into space, this very technical move, without getting into all the technicalities. It was a very long tether of material that was glowing with a kind of phosphorus material. And as the camera zoomed in to watch this thing float away, because even, you know, disasters in space, they record that too.
Sure.
Or go live, in this case live, sure enough, these UFOs appear. And they appear to be circling with a rotating pattern and sort of a revolving pattern as well. And they seem to be going behind this tether. So we aired this footage on Fox for the first time last year. We noticed that the UFOs seemed to have a very, you know, classic shape, a disc, a very clear disc with a very weird notch on the edge, like someone had taken a bite out of it.
Exactly.
And there was also a little circle in the middle that was pulsing weirdly and almost seeming to spin in place.
That's right.
Now, NASA and other people that we've spoken to, mostly off the record, have not been able to explain anything logically about this. And I know there are people on the internet right now that could, as they're listening right now, can go to certain websites and they could actually see these UFOs.
Oh, yes.
That appear to be behind the tether.
Now, the important part is with the notch out of them, or like a bite taken out of them.
That's
something to remember.
Right, and the circle in the middle.
Yes.
Is indeed exactly what we have on this new video from England.
This is what the lady photographed.
Right. Here's the X-File, if you will, if you're writing a drama, which I like to stay in the reality end, so
sure.
Let's stick with the basics. A good story, usually a true one, is as good as any fiction, if not better. So here's the line. The line is, can you imagine a UFO shot by NASA and recorded on videotape by many people here down on Earth that appears to show UFOs going behind this 90-mile-away tether? That means these UFOs are like 3 miles wide.
Right.
The same thing, or very similar, was recorded over England in October. So why would that be? And now, if a camera is the same as NASA uses, then maybe we could say it's the same shape caused by the camera trying to make sense of light. But I don't see it. So now, if you remove that, you're dealing with a great mystery, and we are now talking to the right people, really, to get NASA to go public about this and say, okay, well, why don't we consider discussing for the first time the chance that our own cameras have captured UFOs in space? They tend to always poo-poo this stuff as if it's debris, ice that was released by the exhaust of the shuttle, or anything but,
usually.
Exactly. Never that there's an object out there that, you know what, guys, we don't know what this is. Now, the explanations for what they saw in space that we aired last year, and the new one, I mean, God only knows what they're going to say about the new one, but the old one from last year, and it actually was shot 3 years or videotaped 3 years before, I have to say to you that the answers that we're getting are rather nonsensical, and I say that with all due respect. Things like, well, the camera was trying to make sense again of an object far away, and you know, some of the answers I've gotten, and not from NASA particularly, because keep in mind, NASA is a huge organization, and there's many scientists that have been affiliated, and there's many that will talk to you either on the record or off the record about UFOs.
Robert, real quickly, at best, how much of the screen was filled with this object at the best point?
Great question. When you have a 19-inch television screen, at some point, right directly in the middle, it's about 6 or 7 inches.
Really? Really? Yeah. That's pretty big.
I love that because, again, you're asking the key question I was getting to with my little rambling about the NASA issue. NASA has been very open, at least to me, or at least some of their best people, about talking to me about these possibilities. But for the first time, I'd like to see if this could be the time they come on and say, let's look at this very seriously. You see detail. You see structure.
Oh, yes.
You see possibly exhaust areas. If it's a light being emitted by some special lighting device, to emulate a UFO, to hoax an entire town where UFOs have been seen for months before and after.
Well, then NASA did it too.
Yeah, so then you look at that.
Robert, hold on a moment. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. Robert Kiviat is my guest. He's got a brand new piece of footage, and it's a whopper.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 8, 2001.
All right.
make myself believe it. This night will never go.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 8, 2001.
Robert Kiviat is here, Bob Kiviat, who's been responsible for a lot of what you've seen, Alien Autopsy, Factor Fiction, Miracles and Visions, Factor Fiction, Prophecies of the Millennium, UFOs, the best evidence ever caught on tape, and on and on and on. And now he's found this housewife in Great Britain who has this incredible hunk of footage of a craft, which you will be seeing, and you can sort of get a sense of it. It's very much like one NASA took, as he mentioned. It's on my website under a program and tonight's guest info, and you can link right over to the BBC article, which has a photograph of the video that Bob has. And he's paid the license fee for it. And then I tell you, without providence, absolutely without providence, I have one up there that will take your breath away under What's New video, UFO video from North Bay, Ontario, will take your breath away. But there is zero providence on it, and I don't know if I'd say zero confidence. It's one of the best fakes I've ever seen, or it's the real thing. You decide. It's up there right now. Back now to Bob Kiviat, and Bob, I'm curious, this housewife, why did she go outside with a camcorder in the first place? I mean, how did she happen to catch this? Part of the providence.
It's a good question. Our understanding is that she actually was watching TV. It's wonderful. She's watching television, and she's glancing off in the distance past the TV, one side or the other, and there she sees something, and she mentions to her husband to take a look, and you kind of hear it unfold on the tape, and kind of get interested as she sees this through the viewfinder, and then it starts to behave very strangely, and you hear her kind of narrate the whole thing.
And I see.
It's rather incredible because, again, and providence isn't always the best, and one of the things I aired on NBC back in 93, and you mentioned at the introduction, was this video that's known as the Guardian video.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a videotape that was disseminated rather nicely. It was given to two top UFO researchers, one in England, one in the USA. Luckily, we had just had on our show, Now It Can Be Told, with Geraldo Rivera, the guy that, when I was there in New York, and as I was moving over to Unsolved Mysteries, I had this story that had just broken of a UFO appearing to land in a Canadian field, and it was sent in by the Guardian with a fingerprint, and no one knows who this guy is. So here we are probably, almost 10 years later, with a mystery that no one knows where the video came from.
So the Guardian provided his... presumably, his fingerprint.
It's a fingerprint, Art. It looks like someone printed, not a real kind of fingerprint that police would take off of an object, but a printed fingerprint. And it looked like maybe it could be a real fingerprint, and the UFO researchers looked into it, and they couldn't figure out what it was. No organization of officialdom could figure out who the fingerprint belonged to.
I was figuring maybe the Guardian would be back shortly for his residuals with his fingerprint.
You know, it's one of the most amazing videos to date, and I don't think there's been like an ounce of research that found any closure who this person is. And there are people, and I will mention on the radio tonight, who are studying it very heavily, and the guy who broke it, a guy named Bob Exler, and to some degree a guy named Timothy Good, they were the ones who got this videotape sent to them, and they, Bob Exler for sure, has been studying it to this day. Again, almost 10 years later, Art.
Well, there you are. See, that's what happens to me, Bob. These things are like the one I've got up there tonight. They're dropped in my lap, you know, and no providence. Here it is, bud.
Well, those are the cases that, unfortunately, most TV producers and journalists alike, and being both, I have to tell you that we tend to shy away from anonymousness, but or anonymity, if you were. But I will say this, that does not mean you throw it out. You have to look at it. You have to say, why would someone send in? In this case, the one, I guess, on their website, what, is 20 seconds?
About 20 seconds.
If only the people at home knew what you could do with 20 seconds of video, or how little it would cost to create something very powerful.
Yeah, we live in a new world.
Well, we think we showed this, and again, we're trying. And if the viewers at home go, well, I watch his shows, and or listeners at home say, well, we were viewers and we saw his shows, and it's not 100% proven, but I could say one thing. There are cases that we've shown in our shows across the board that we cannot explain. They're as mysterious as the day we saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are cases like in our World's Greatest Hoaxes show for Fox that we believe you could stamp them hoax right now.
Let me ask you this, Bob. Alien Autopsy, the famous Alien Autopsy, did it show up on the World's Greatest Hoaxes?
Absolutely.
It did.
The last time, Art, I'm sure you're jesting. No, the last time you had me on was when we did World's Greatest Hoaxes.
That's right.
And we were revealing for the first time evidentiary. I mean, we're talking about courtroom-type evidence that looked like the case, the entire Alien Autopsy, was a hoax. We were the same production, same producer, me, same writer, same guy who said it might be real, and was now saying 3 years later, I don't think it is.
And I bet you did almost as well on the ratings.
Exactly. We did almost as well on a Monday night against Monday Night Football.
Yep.
I said to the guys at Fox, come on, I mean, look at this. We need to get into many more cases, a lot of stuff to clean up, and great stuff to break. And they're like, well, we'll think about it. And sure enough, here we are, you know, doing specials for them. But, you know, we're trying, and we're talking about doing the new case as well. So, again, Could It Be True is the series that we hope will sort of clean up the phenomenal end of TV and get to what's possibly real and throw out the stuff that's completely ridiculous. And I have to say there are a few cases that look great at the start,
yep,
but they fall apart.
Sure.
And you got to be honest and say, you know what, the case is looking a little shaky, and if it looks really shaky, you tell the public. And that's what we're doing. We're moving up the story from a maybe to a possibility to maybe not.
So then this particular footage is going to be in a show called?
Well, the series that we're presenting to, actually two major networks are involved, but we will say this, that we have done a lot of shows for Fox. We are talking to Fox. We assume that we'll get the best possible consideration there for the series. And by the way, can I just take a second and tell you, there are two other cases in the last year of UFO-related video.
Yes, tell me.
There's another case breaking, and I think you may have heard about it. A very nice guy, a guy named Santiago Yature, I'm probably not saying his name particularly right there, but he's from Mexico.
Okay.
And he has done a wonderful job with a case that's really making a lot of people who've seen it, like me, extremely interested. It appears that this family was going from Washington State down to Monterrey, Mexico, and so they're crossing the Texas area back in December. And again, the video camera's out, they're on a trip, and sure enough, something is outside their car window. And they pull over to the side of the road, and what unfolds again in about five, six, 7 minutes, is a wonderful UFO event that, again, has to be put into the same echelon as what we're talking about here. An incredible display of what appears to be a UFO form into a plume of some kind, like a mushroom. Then it seems to transform into a rocket-like device, all on video.
Now and you're getting into paranormal.
It's strange. And again, I think you can say with a degree of certainty, any jury, I think, if you showed the video to any jury without knowing much more than this family claimed they shot it, I don't think you could argue that innocent family members are in a car and they appear to be shooting it and it's not a hoax. And again, the provenance is clear. There is no issue. But what's even more amazing, and Santiago's been trying to educate me about this the last couple of weeks. I've been really busy on this other case, but sure enough, I've been hearing a lot about it. And it looks like the family had UFOs follow them back to their house in Washington State. And sure enough, they're videotaping them. So it's like the Gulf Breeze, like, case down in Florida from years ago, but now it's a woman and the UFO seems to be following her on her trips. Now, I say the woman because there seems to be some feeling that the wife in this family might be the center of it, but who knows? I mean, she was holding the video camera when the first event happened in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that means whoever's on this craft. And again, you know, Art, I think it's important to start saying words clearly. You know, the term reality TV hasn't meant very much lately with shows like Survivor.
Have you secured this new video?
We're now negotiating, and, you know, obviously, I'm not going to start talking about money because every time...
No, that's all right. That's all right.
I will say this.
But you're working on it.
The issue is that Santiago, again, like David Sarita, who talked about the UFO event back in, you know, tether footage that we talked about, NASA, which compares to the new British case.
It sure
does. David Sarita was on your show. David was on my last UFO show. Santiago was on my last UFO show. It's natural for sources to come back to you with the cases that you have, that they have. So basically, Santiago and I are talking. There's no guarantee that it will pan out. Neither will. We never know if any case art isn't going to become something other than what we thought, even during or before the airing, and even after the airing. So we're trying to get the public the best evidence and see if it stands.
I understand. Test. Bob, I got a question for you.
Sure.
This is purely speculative, so you don't have to answer this, but I mean, if Dan Golden is sitting at home, NASA's Dan Golden, watching, I don't know, he probably watches NASA Select all the time, I don't know, and he notices something out the window, honey, look at that, grabs his camcorder, Dan Golden runs out into his front yard and films something like this lady did, comes back in, what do you think Dan Golden does with the footage? That's a more important question than you know.
That's an interesting question, because if there was undisputed evidence of any UFO, that clearly was a mechanical craft that didn't come from any country on Earth, I have to believe that any NASA organization or any one of our Defense Department organizations, and there are many, you know, I got to believe they would go public with that.
You think Dan would go public?
Well, we're about to test it, because here's where we're going. We're going to ask the top people at NASA, the office you just said, to comment, finally, about two things. The UFO video in space that was captured during the tether footage on tape by some intrepid videographers down here with their VCRs, and the new video in Britain. And we may throw in the bonus question is, was David Sarita blacked out during one of the Art Bell shows? And, you know, he's the guy who talked about that footage. I don't know what to make of it, Art. Did you see the tether footage? Are you aware of it?
Oh, yes, of course I've seen it, yes.
Now, so you know the shape and the structure.
Oh, sure. It's a match for this baby. There's no question about it. It's the same thing.
How would you react if someone told you that both were created by some camera struggling to make sense of a bright light?
Well, then I would say... I don't know. I would say a few things that I better not repeat on the radio about NASA. So I think you're really, you paid a good license fee here is what I think. I think this is a good thing you've got, and I think it's going to be inexplicable for NASA, but I don't know. Maybe they'll say, let's see, if I were going to try to pretend to be NASA, I might say, well, under similar lighting conditions, we could produce similar results, both for the lady in England and for our own footage.
And we're going to see
tether
that.
Footage.
And that's what Could It Be True is about, Art. We're about to try to find out.
That's what I think I'd say.
And we want them to participate in that and be active in some way and say, okay, if you make a claim that the video can be explained that easily...
Then let's have it.
Hey, help us. Help us understand what that camera was in space.
Mm-hmm.
Let's compare it to the one that was down here on Earth and figure out, well, how could two images, one in space and one over Britain, be so similar?
And do you think you've got the channels open wide enough to actually get them on camera and talk about this?
Well, my feeling is the openness... when I wrote for Omni Magazine back in the early 90s, and they talked about the face on Mars with me, one thing they said about the face on Mars, we're going to try to get one good picture and dispute, and hopefully, once and for all, be able to dispute any claim that it is artificial.
Well, they just took that picture.
Now, I ask you, okay, so they finally came clean, I think, and showed the best photograph they could possibly take. What do you think of the image?
Well, you know, I think it doesn't end the controversy. When I first looked at the image, I said, they were right all along. You know, it looks like a pile of rocks. And I still, to some degree, think that. However, I do also see what all the people who are making lots of noise now are saying, and that is if you cover half the face and you look at it, it becomes something else. And then look at the other half, and it becomes something else again. And as you know, Mr. Hoagland has said all along, all these many years, that it would be hominoid and feline.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, if you look at it carefully, you can see how people arrive at that conclusion. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that it really is that? I haven't made up my mind at all.
I always find it interesting when they leave out, they describe the face on Mars, and they being any debunker, any skeptic, anybody who thinks it couldn't be, and I'm not just saying NASA, anybody. Anybody who doesn't believe it's a face that was created by some unknown species or some unknown race, keep in mind that you have a pyramid very nearby, as Richard, I'm sure, has educated your listeners over the years.
Yes.
An amazing array of objects positioned on the surface by Cydonia, which doesn't seem to make sense.
I know.
And people who look at that area, like Errol Turin, formerly from the Defense Mapping Agency, I'm not sure if he's even there anymore, guys like this, I mean, top guys, Dr. Mark Carlotto, these are people that rival anybody that the NASA group has. And these guys have worked with those same sectors, and they believe, at least until now I believe, I haven't heard anything otherwise, that it still looks artificial to them.
I know.
So I'm sitting here going, when will we really start to study these things seriously so that we can say once and for all, it is or it isn't, and move on. Face on Mars, we may have to go there, or we may have to actually get a piece of that thing and bring it back and look at it before anyone's going to be conclusively...
Well, you know, when they finally do set the Mars mission, the manned mission, if we ever get one, it's going to be interesting to see where they decide to land on
Mars. I still believe, as the cover of that Omni magazine article from many, many years ago, in 94, that I wrote, I still believe the cover said it all. Eventually you'll see an astronaut walking toward the face of pyramid-like structures, and TV people are going to be watching on television.
I hope we live long enough to see it.
I think it will still be a mystery by then.
Well, this TV show you're working on that has will probably have, certainly this one piece of footage, if not both you've talked about.
Well, that's just the beginning.
And much more. When might this come to fruition, would you guess?
My feeling is, we're in talks now, obviously, with Fox and with the other network, which will remain nameless, but at this point, I will say that our goal is to get the footage on the air by the early fall, the latest. So could it be true we'd launch the series with an amazing hour? And there's one other story you should be aware of.
Yes.
Actually, many, you and I could talk for hours.
I know.
But there's one case that is about a Bigfoot shot in the Everglades in Florida. And the videotape made the news back in the summer last year. And we just worked out, finally, the arrangement where we're going to be airing it. And it's going to show, again, many minutes, or at least a few minutes, a couple of minutes, of a Bigfoot man-like creature walking in the Everglades. It is either, again, a hoax or the real thing.
Is it as good, technically, as the Patterson film?
I'll let the viewer decide, but I will say this. At least there's a direct provenance. The guy is alive, and boy, I'll say, is he alive. He's a very interesting guy, and he has a lot to say about people who think he's a faker, and we like that because, again, he takes anybody on. And the video, by the way, again, follows many years of sightings in the area of the Everglades down in Florida, and again, a legend has been built about the skunk ape, chiefly because there's been some photographs taken. So photographs were first.
Some pretty doggone good photographs, actually.
Now the video.
Yeah.
And again, there are people who will say, it can't be real. But we're saying, wait a minute, the news took it seriously. We're just like them. We're news people. We take it seriously. Until you can say it's not, at least you have the providence.
Listen, the providence on the pictures, I know, is really good. I mean, the lady, that was not given to any news organization, nor sold, nor anything. The lady gave it to the sheriff's department.
Right. Now, you're talking about the one that is most recent, and it's tied to that other video I'm telling you about.
Yep.
And again, it's a local area where some might say orangutan, some might say there are creatures similar to this that could be explained as natural or known species. But again, Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster. Again, I have two cases now, two. One in Australia, where a sea monster apparently washed up on an Australian beach.
A sea monster.
And actually, a Turkish Loch Ness Monster caught on tape.
Turkish.
Like the cameraman had a shoot with the creature.
Listen, you're right. We could spend hours, but we're out of time.
Maybe.
You are definitely at the top of your game, my friend. We will talk again. We'll schedule a longer appearance because there's a lot we could talk
about.
Bob Kivia, thank you.
Thank you, Art.
And good night. And the BBC article that has just a single shot from the video of what Bob Kivia did is on my website. Just go to program tonight's guest info and the BBC article for the new UFO that I've got up there. That's a mind blower. Under what's new, it's a video with audio. It says video UFO video from North Bay, Ontario. Under what's new, check it out.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 8th, 2001. Presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired June 8th, 2001.
Good morning.
Good evening. Good afternoon, whatever may be the case.
Coming up in a few moments is Major Ed Dames. Major Dames is a remote viewer. Major Dames was involved in the original American remote viewing program that lasted 20 years. Major Ed Dames is a straightforward guy. A lot of people, he's a very controversial guy, and a lot of people are on his case all the time. But I happen to know there's providence here relating to our last hour. I have a copy of Major Ed Dames' full military record, and I've read every bit of it. Everything he says about what he did stands up. The things he has to say are pretty wild, no question about that. And tonight, he's come to do us all a big favor for... Some of the things he's going to be talking about are pretty close to the heart for me right now. Ed Dames is going to be talking about and has taken a look at the city under the water off the Cuban coast. Ed Dames tonight is going to report on what he found when he looked at the shadow people. And I understand he tells me he's really got something to tell me about the shadow people. Should be very, very interesting, huh? All right, I've got a couple of announcements that I want to make up front before Ed gets on the air. One of them is, I have got one of the most kick-butt pieces of UFO video you've ever seen. It could be totally a fake, but if it is, it's really a good one. Even the audio is excellent. So it's an AVI file, and you can download it from my website right now. Just go to artbell.com, go to What's New, click on video, UFO video from North Bay, Ontario, with a question mark there, and that has to do, of course, with the providence. But, oh my, this is some hunk of video. In fact, we may have Ed take a look at it. It's a little late for tonight. We just got it today. It was sent to me anonymously, of course. Not actually. Actually, Mark, in fact, Hutchins sent it to me. So not totally anonymously, though he found it on some other website that no longer exists, and he says the same thing. The video, and it's got audio with it, by the way, if it's a fake, it's a good one. It really is a good one. So you're going to want to take a look at that. That's on my website now at artbell.com. And no licensing fees here, folks. You can just take a look at it. I guess it's a providence that costs all that money. And that's a statement probably not very far from the truth. Nobody has a way of knowing, certainly not me, whether this is real or not. But, boy, it's exciting. It's really exciting. So check it out, artbell.com. What's new? And a video, UFO video from North Bay, Ontario. Download it. Keep it. Enjoy it. From me to you. In fact, from Mark and myself to you. So there you have it. Coming up in a moment, the ever-controversial, ever-exciting, ever-fascinating Major Ed Dames. And now, from out of the mist, comes our favorite remote viewer, Major Ed Dames. Major Dames, welcome.
From the city of the angels, Mark.
How you doing, Ed? You're actually here on the mainland, huh?
I leave in the morning to go back to the islands in Polynesia. I just finished a TRV training course, a basic course in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you taught a class of people sitting in front of you like you would in a class, right?
Actually, I only teach two students at a time. It's a very intensive training course, and it is a skill. It's like learning how to either bake a cake or fly an airplane, two good analogies, and one instructor, two students.
In what way is it like baking a cake, Ed?
In the following way. There's about nominally, I'd say, 400 things to learn in the basic course. And so if one had never gone into a kitchen before, and one had signed up to take a baking course, and
right.
you had never seen a stove, ingredients, oven, or a recipe book, that's what it's like. At the end of the week, you would know how to bake.
Hmm. So in some ways, as easy as baking a cake?
Yes, in some ways, yes. In other ways, no.
All right. What, in fact, it is, remote viewing, we'll spend about a minute on here or 2 minutes because by now I have a pretty educated audience, but there's always new people there. So remote viewing is what in a nutshell?
In a nutshell, it's a way of turning the unconscious part of our individual minds toward the collective unconscious and again toward a specific pattern of information, something we call a target, a person, a place, a thing, or event. And locking on to that target, which happens to be very easy, and describing the target in great detail in a very rigorous fashion. The rigor comes in because we have to hold our imagination at bay and keep our ego out of the way, keep the ego from analyzing the data, and hold on to the target for 45 minutes of time, and then describe in great detail a specific person, place, thing, or event.
And I have no question in my mind, I have an ego. I know I do.
Well,
I'm not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
So do you. I mean, I can listen to your voice and your assured presentation, and I know damn well you've got an ego. So I wonder how much of a problem it has been for you to learn to squish it for what you do.
It's actually not a problem. One has to become very aware of the ego. You're right. I have an ego. But when I put my pen on paper to remote view, it goes out the door for 45 minutes. Now, I can strap it back on at the end of the session, but if it enters in any way, shape, or form during a remote viewing session, I will crash and burn, and I need to know that. I also need to know the limitations of my own mind, that mine isn't what life is all about.
How hard has it been for you to learn to send your ego out the door?
It pops up in the basic course, in basic training, and I'm the director, as you know, of the Technical Remote Viewing Institute, which is a center for excellence for this, 20 years of research, government.
Indeed.
And it once it goes out the door, it's out. Once you recognize the damage that it can cause in terms of destroying your ability to describe a remote target, you'll never let it enter a session again. So we train that away. In other words, we train the student to recognize when it's entering into the description of a target. We train that in the first week of training. The other higher level courses, TRV 200 and 300 at the Institute, it's gone. It's no longer a problem.
So you can do that completely?
Absolutely. We
and
have
it goes,
to. We
goes
have
out the door. Out the door. Probably crushing a couple of innocent students on the way, huh?
Oh, you bet. It's a very humbling experience.
It is. I've never dispensed totally with my ego, and so I don't know what that would feel like. I guess it would be humbling is probably the right word, huh?
It is, but it's only for 45 minutes, so it doesn't hurt too much.
Uh-huh. But at moments when you're not actually doing the work itself, your pride in your work is absolutely evident. As I listen to you, there it is.
It's there, and I absolutely recognize it. But I recognize it, Art. I know that it's there, so I have it under control.
Okay. And with this ability, and I think it's pretty well proven, gosh, I have talked to, I think, almost everybody in that original program. I really think that I've talked to most of you.
You missed a couple that didn't come forward, but you've got most of them, Mark.
Who have I missed?
I can't mention their name.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
All right. I've got someone coming on that that you might know. I'd like to mention a name to you, and maybe it's somebody you will know. If I can get to it. There's a lot of bookings that I've got here, Ed, that nobody knows anything about, and this is one of them. Let's see. Dr. Greer, they don't know he's coming on. I'll have it any moment here. And I do want to ask you about him. So, at any rate, Ed, you've got some pretty good stuff coming up for us tonight, don't you?
You tasked me with two problems. One was very easy. The findings were quite revolutionary. The other problem was quite difficult, very difficult indeed.
Really?
Yes.
Which was the most difficult of the two?
The phenomenon that, or class of phenomena that you call, and you have been calling on your show, shadow people. Shadow forms, shadow people.
I thought that was going to be the hard one. I thought that was going to be the interesting one.
It's very difficult. As a remote viewer, It took all of my expertise, it took almost 20 years of experience and all the tools I could pull out of my toolbox to get a handle on that. In fact, for a while, I thought it was beyond my ken, but we finally nailed it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that tonight.
All right. Well, I've lost this. I don't know. I'll find it, and then I'll ask you about him. But save a couple of them anyway. And this gentleman's name is new to me, so someday when I find it, I'll
okay.
give it to you. Save a couple, then. I've had most of the people from the original program on, most of the people that that you worked with, and your job was what?
My job was operations and training officer. I was part of the original prototype team, and it was an experimental team to see if, with an understanding, a laboratory understanding that the ability to remote view, the ability to be psychic, to possess extrasensory perception is innate, could we take that and train it to individuals who are not natural psychics? When that discovery about the model, this is the model that we use in our production kit.
And Stephen Schwartz.
Stephen Schwartz,
yes.
Was actually, I chaired a panel. I was on a panel with Stephen Schwartz once. Stephen Schwartz worked with natural psychics, some of the best in America, Harold Sherman, Ingo Swann, Hella Hammett before she died. And Stephen Schwartz was a master I want to use spy terminology since I was a spy master at one point in my life. He was a master at exploiting the natural abilities of natural psychics and putting it together into a usable picture to produce find archaeological ruins, the same kind of things we do in technical remote viewing, but using natural psychics. And the deal with natural psychics, when we use them at various times in the military, is that you're not dealing with a technique that can be trained. The natural psychic normally does not know how he or she is producing the information, and one does not know, since they're not trained, the natural psychic doesn't know when they cross that line into imagination. That all those problems were transcended with the advent of remote viewing the way we teach it today.
So if you take on a new student, Ed, would you rather take on a really good natural psychic or somebody who's basically psychically a flatline?
What you call flatline is not necessarily flatline.
Well, flatline in terms of how well developed, to the point.
You don't really know the natural talents, or the kit that we are putting out on the market screens for natural talent.
Yeah, I know. I love that kit, by the way. We'll talk about that. I love it.
But if I can train anyone to be a very, very good remote viewer, better than the best natural psychic.
Truly anyone, Ed, or are there duds in the world?
There's a couple of duds, but I'd say they're less than about 4% of the population are.
Wow.
Yeah, and these are people that are, they're duds not because of innate ability necessarily or any inability. It's because their lifestyle. They refuse to stop taking drugs, or they are mentally imbalanced. And if you're not balanced and you go through a remote viewing course, that's a little bit too much.
Well, Ed, according to the American Psychiatric Association, 1 out of 4 people is mentally ill.
What association is that, Art?
Really, I mean, I believe that is an accurate figure, to one degree or another. I mean,
well, that means
obviously,
that's a 50% chance that you or I are mentally ill.
I've never doubted it for a moment, Ed.
Flip a coin.
Anyway, or that, and there's an even smaller chance that we're both cockeyed.
That's right.
But the bottom line is, it can't be as good for everybody. And you're saying it's almost as good for everybody.
Actually, the bottom line is this. For people who are, usually our ideal students are older than 30 years old. They are students that are very balanced intellectually, emotionally, physically. They're in touch with themselves.
Why over 30?
I mean, it
takes that long to get straight, or what?
Yeah, actually it does. Actually, generally speaking, it does. The life experiences are necessary because once we turn your mind onto a target and ask you to describe something at a distance, that perception can be taught to a child. A child can be taught very easily to do the same thing that an adult can do. Hmm. But when you come back with this perception that does not have a label on it,
yes,
no word idea,
yes,
your memory needs to come up with a label, a word to describe what you're getting, or the ability to sketch at least what you're perceiving.
Sure.
And a child doesn't have that lexicon. The thesaurus is missing. They haven't had enough life experiences directly or indirectly to be able to say, this is whatever. You see what I mean?
Yes.
We run into the same thing with the housewife, for instance. A housewife can be taught to become an extremely good remote viewer if she had never done anything in her life, but she might have trouble describing, let's say, the inside of a nuclear weapon or klystron tubes or something like that, and may have to revert to imagination and say, well, this is like a Cuisinart.
No frame of reference whatsoever.
No baseline, no lexicon, no experience with something like that.
Isn't that sometimes dangerous, though? In other words, I can see, for example, a remote viewer who's got some target and they're sketching it, and at some point it must be almost irresistible when they themselves realize what they're sketching.
To take a leap
they ought not take and finish it off.
Not really. We don't run into that much of a problem, because most of the time what we do is train remote viewers to work against any target that they choose. We're not setting them up to work a blind target. We're teaching them to choose their targets and to accurately describe them in spite of what they imagine the target to be.
Well, I have certainly seen incredible demonstrations.
Well, you're about to see another one. There's a Fox special coming up. They were spent 2 weeks in my classroom, remote viewing, and a remote viewing environment where the best of the institute will be shown to in primetime TV. You'll get to see remote viewing at its best. And
well, I've already seen it, and now it may have been in one of your tapes, but the fact of the matter is, no, I've seen it on TV shows that you participated in, Ed, where they send a camera crew out to a unknown location. And by God, a remote viewer will sit there and sketch out beyond any question, to everybody's satisfaction, sufficiently close enough rendition of where it is in the world or what the setting is. I've seen it, so
we've gone one better with this. We took one student in my TRV Institute 300 course, in the advanced course, and only with one student, not a team, just the student. The student not only described the target but named it, called it, and described what was going on in the minds of the people in the site. So
how did the TV people most times react to that, Ed?
They were quite shocked.
The producers, the camera people, and all the rest of it. They've got to have two locations under simultaneous surveillance, and they just must rock back and go, oh my God.
They were nonplussed, to say the least, Art, because people really don't know how powerful this tool is until they actually see it. And I would not do that television show unless I was promised that the viewing audience would see how much work it is to remote view. I did not want the television viewing audience to be left with the idea that this was a layback, relax, close your eyes, and tell me what you see.
No, it's not that.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And when you have seen it demonstrated, as I'm sure many of you have, you understand that remote viewing is absolutely real. I mean, it's real. That's all there is to it. Ed, it comes from collecting information from the collective consciousness. What is the collective consciousness? What's your best definition?
Instead of a definition, I'll give you a good example. A child prodigy who would learn to play the piano in an unbelievable way after
yes.
they're taught.
Yes.
This creativity can take off. Knows no bounds. Well, there are other children, autistic savants, autistic children
yes.
who magically, who having never been taught mathematics or piano, can produce the same type, the same caliber of magic, but never have been exposed to the techniques at all. They're dipping into the collective unconscious to pull the information in.
All right.
That's where we go also.
All right. Hold on, Ed. Stay right there. Yeah, I mean, where else would it come from? Some would say God. They might even be the same arenas. Who knows? But it comes from somewhere, doesn't it?
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 8th, 2001.
Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always miss with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore, 'cause I love you.
Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 8, 2001.
By the way, I watched the Frazier-Ollie fight live on pay-per-view, and it was actually very, very good. Both those young ladies did their daddies proud. They both came out with a lot of heart, and boy, did they fight a fight. Layla won, by the way. Oh, man, what a fight. For girls. First time I ever saw a girls box. Ed Dames is here, Major Ed Dames, and we're going to hit some things that are pretty close to home tonight with Ed. The city off the coast of Cuba, 2,200 feet under the water. I'll remind you of some of the details of that we have. And even more perplexing, I guess, for Ed, or more difficult, I don't know, we'll find out. The shadow people, all of that coming up directly. Once again, there is a UFO video on my website right now, which is absolute knockout stuff. Now, I'm not telling you that it's real because I have no way of knowing. No providence. We got it from a very nice gentleman, Mark Hutchins, who sent it along. And it's supposedly North Bay, Ontario. It sounds to me like a British accent. It's available in both Windows Media format and Real Player format. And maybe somebody out there will raise their hand and take credit for this, and we'll find out from whence it came. In the meantime, it's certainly the first time I've seen it, and I suspect the first time you're going to be seeing it. There's even audio to go with it. It's a knockout. It's at artbell.com right now. And under What's New, look for video UFO video from North Bay, Ontario. As I say, it's a knockout. So log on and be knocked out. By the way, another big head shaker, only this time in an impossible place in Japan. 8 children were killed, 15 people injured at a Japanese elementary school on Friday when a former janitor with a history of mental illness went on a stabbing rampage, and this time decided to stab children in Japan, of all places. So, horrible news. CNN was covering it all day. Just absolutely horrible news. Once again, back to Major Ed Dames. Major Dames, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. Where to be? I guess the best place for us to begin tonight might be the city, supposed city under the water in Cuba. Now, we've done some pretty serious investigation of this story. I'd like to read the audience just a little bit of what I got that started the whole thing out. It's a Reuters story, and I'm just going to read you a portion of the Reuters story, everybody. It's entitled Lost City off Western Cuba with a question mark. And it, I'm picking it out of the middle. Most intriguingly, researchers using sonar equipment have discovered at a depth of about 2,200 feet, that's almost half mile under, a huge land plateau with clear images of what appears to be urban development partly covered by sand. From above, the shapes resemble pyramids, roads, and buildings. ADC, that's a company, is excited but reluctant to speculate until a joint investigation with the Cuban Academy of Sciences and the U.S. National Geographic Society takes place early this summer. Now, a lady named Zalitsky, who apparently found this, said, quote, "It is stunning. What we see in our high-resolution sonar images, a side scan, using side scan, by the way, are limitless rolling white sand plains, and in the middle of this beautiful white sand, there are clear, man-made, large-size architectural designs. It looks like when you fly over an urban development in a plane, and you see highways, tunnels, and buildings. We don't know what it is, and we don't have the videotaped evidence of this yet. But we do not believe that nature is capable of producing planned symmetrical architecture unless it is a miracle," she added in an interview at her office at Tarawa along the coast east of Havana. Now, Linda Moulton Howe, for us, bless her heart, contacted the U.S. National Geographic Society, and you may recall, if you heard it, they admitted, albeit like pulling teeth, but they admitted that they were going after this project. Now, it is impossible for Linda, and certainly for me, to believe that the National Geographic Society would make one tiny move without having these sonar images clearly showing large architectural buildings located 2,200 feet under the water. That's, again, almost a half mile. The last ice age perhaps would allow for 300 feet, 300 feet. So something down 2,200 feet would have to be shockingly, shockingly old, millions and millions of years old. And so with the National Geographic admitting they were going after it, in all probability, there's great weight. Ms. Zalitsky is off at sea right now. We can't get hold of her. Linda will do that as soon as she returns to dry land somewhere, if she will talk. But in the meantime, I said, when I last talked to him, "Hey, Ed, how about taking a look at this?" And here, once again, is Ed Dames. That's the history. Ed, you took a look.
We did. We set this problem up the way that we do in technical remote viewing to make sure that we're targeting, that our minds, our unconscious attention is targeting this specific area off of Cuba at this specific time, present time, because mind is outside of time. So we have to make sure that we qualify our search in terms of the present time today.
All right.
And this we did. So the good news is, and fascinating news is, that Ms. Zelitsky has what she says she has. She has what NASA has so often called non-fractal images. These are these are artificial structures. There is a tremendous amount of rubble, heavy-duty rubble, at the 2,200 feet level. But more, and in that rubble is at least one, possibly two. At least we locked onto one or two. My colleagues and I, very large pyramids that are still that are intact. there's a lot of rubble on this plane, but the pyramids are intact, Art.
Pyramids.
Yes, very large. They're on a square base. They're not. It isn't like the pyramids that you see in Egypt on the Giza Plateau, where the pyramid goes down and meets the ground.
Yes.
These two pyramids are on a square base, raised base.
Oh my God! You know, that's just like Mars.
Well, I can't speak for Mars right now, but I
understand. But at Cydonia, there are pyramids very much like the ones you're describing right now. Just as a matter of interest, so you're seeing pyramids below the water. Off Cuba. Pyramids.
One, perhaps two. We've locked onto one and perhaps two. What we'll do now is explore them in terms of are they hollow? Were they actually structures? Gain some information about the culture that built them. I have some bad news about this also.
There are, Ed, some people who think that this could be what they've been looking for so long, Atlantis. It is, in fact, on the edge of the area described as where Atlantis might be. I'm sure you're aware of that.
I'm aware of what people say, but it would be very difficult for us as remote viewers to take the idea of Atlantis and gain chain of custody. For instance, what is Atlantis in the minds of people? Is it simply an idea, a myth? Is it a combination of a city that was real in addition to myth? So we are much more comfortable looking at a physical area and then describing it. That's what the military team was commissioned to do 20 years ago, was to get inside of secret buildings and describe what kind of weapon systems are there. So we're very comfortable with this kind of work, remote viewing. It doesn't matter whether it's 2,200 feet under the ocean or 2.2 parsecs, you know, out there in the galaxy.
Right. Pyramids. All right, pyramids. And you said there was bad news.
The bad news is that this particular urban environment, let's call it, was met its fate, its demise, extremely quickly. In a matter of minutes, this thing went under, Art, very, very fast. And so what we did was to turn our attention, instead of describing the culture and who built this and who these people were, which we'll
right.
do at a later time,
right.
it became immediately apparent to my team that, whoa, this place went down fast, literally. What caused that? And so we turned our attention to the cause, the source of this catastrophe.
Well, we'd all like to know the answer to that one.
The source was, it was a very large heavenly body, very close to Earth, passing near the Earth. And it meets, for all intents and purposes, all of the descriptions that Zachariah Sitchin has of this planet that he calls the 10th planet, or a Greek called Nemesis, Nibiru.
12th planet, I think.
Well, it's the 12th planet in terms of the Sumerian description. It would be the 10th planet in terms of modern day.
That's true, I guess.
Yeah, because the Sumerians counted the moon and the sun as heavenly bodies within the solar system, and they weren't counting just the planets. That's all.
So you're saying there was some incredible geologic disturbance as a result of some large planetary body or some large. Whatever it would be, coming very close to Earth.
Yes, we actually moved, we remote viewed this particular heavenly body, and it meets all of the criteria of a planet. So that's why I'm tending to believe that Sitchin really has done his homework and is on to something.
Wow.
It was not a comet. It was not an asteroid. It was not anything else. The colors that we have, the descriptions of when we go down to the surface of this particular heavenly body, it's like Mars in some respects. It's very large, brown, red, and it passed close enough to the Earth to disturb the Earth to the point where, well, you can see what happened, 2,200 feet in a matter of minutes.
Now, I know that timelines are the most difficult thing with remote viewing, but any chance of any guess at a timeline on this one?
No, Art, we can't do it. It's just too difficult for us. Mind is outside of time. We can describe the event, but we'd have to sit down with archaeologists or geologists and together in tandem. And we as observers would have to be interrogated by these people. They could ask us, for instance, could you describe what was going on here or there at the time? We could turn our attention to that, and 45 minutes later, that's how long it takes to technically remote view a target, we could describe the answer to their question. And they might be able to deduce what window, what time frame, what aperture in time,
well,
this particular event.
If you talk to a geologist, they will say at 2,200 feet, you're talking about millions and millions of years.
That, disagree, I mean,
last, well, they say the last ice age accounted for about a 300 feet difference.
Well, let's say that this was nominally 12,000 years ago. And, I mean, I'm not a geologist.
Well, you're injecting an event that, of course, would make what they're saying irrelevant to what happened to this city, because if some planetary body didn't indeed come that close, obviously the normal geological rules go out the window.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is what I believe happened.
Sure.
Because we don't believe that the city is that old. It doesn't feel that old to us, Art. Whereas in remote viewing in the Institute, training targets, for instance, are specific animals, the largest land animal that ever lived in the Jurassic era on Earth. There can only be one of those, right? So unconscious attention goes right to it. It's stored. That particular animal existed. It's stored in the collective unconscious. We can describe it, whether it's...
Okay. Oh, good. Because here's the next question, Ed. What were you able to determine, if anything, about the previous occupants of this city, this urban area, or whatever it is? What if anything, do we know about them? It was obviously inhabited. It was done by, you know, if what's described here is true and what you've told me is true, then these are artificial structures. So somebody or something put them there, right? Do we know anything about?
Not yet. As I mentioned a moment ago, we were more interested in what took this place down. First of all,
right,
to
right.
validate the existence, we're going to describe this. We'll do a bathymetric survey, our own technical remote viewing survey of this site, describe the people that built it, so that we'll be there, and our descriptions will be ahead of the National Geographic Society magazine.
That's a good one.
Yeah, they'll essentially describe how our descriptions on the Art Bell Show about this particular plateau.
Well, and everybody should remember right now that you're the one who said pyramids. They used a number of other words. They didn't rule out pyramids, certainly, but they seemed to suggest, let's see, large size architectural designs. Well, that could be a pyramid, that's for sure.
I'm telling you right now, I'll hang my hat and my reputation, the reputation of my institute, on the fact that there's one and possibly two very large intact pyramids there now.
Huh.
That will be immediately apparent when they take the equipment down.
We're not sure off which coast it is of Cuba. Do you offhand know?
No, I don't. What we do is go into the mind of Miss Zelitsky. We use her mind, her memory as a reference point, and we just jump from her to her images, and then from the images down to the actual source of the images, and describe what that instrumentation picked up, whether it's a natural environment. It's very, very quickly we can determine whether we're dealing with just a bunch of stones or hills or natural terrain.
I don't think so, Ed, because Ms. Zelitsky is also the one who found the USS Maine. I mean, she's very good at what she does. She's got some history, and what she said was quite specific, and I think she said more than she meant to say. The story's kind of died right now because she's out at sea and nobody can reach her, but We researched Ms. Zelitsky, and she's got quite a history, and a good history, a solid history. So if she said this, there's probably something to it, but she didn't say a word about pyramids.
Well, in my business, we can't afford to be wrong, Art, because it's so controversial. Technical remote viewing is so controversial. If you're wrong, you have hell to pay. The vultures will descend quickly. The amazing Randys of the world will cut your head off. So we can't afford to be wrong, even when you have someone as prominent in their field of archaeology, in this case, as Zelitsky, and she is. We just can't afford to be wrong. We have to assume that she may be describing natural features, and it may, as she said, be a miracle of nature rather than artificial structure. That's how we go into a problem, Art.
All right. You mentioned the amazing, I think not so amazing, Randy. And I'm wondering, you know, he's got this standing $1 million offer for anybody who can demonstrate, well, like the stuff you do, Ed. And so why don't you have his $1 million?
He doesn't really have $1 million. He has pledges from a great number of people who, when they found out that I was going to remove that $1 million from his coffers, they backed out.
What?
Yeah. Well, and a lot of the people who have pledged money to Amazing Randy, they don't, that his organization does not have $1 million. They have people who have pledged enough money to equal $1 million. But when they found out...
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
That you were going to possibly take up the challenge?
That's right. And then when these people found that, these are the people that were the military remote viewing team that the tax dollars went into supporting.
Yes.
They kind of backed out.
When did that happen, Ed?
About 2 years ago.
2 years ago? Mm-hmm. I'll be damned.
Yeah, but we'd be glad to do it again, Art. You know why? Because it's fun.
I have repeatedly invited the amazing, not so amazing Randy onto the program, and he has consistently, as you well know, refused.
Well, actually, I didn't know that, but
again, you didn't know that.
The reason that we would do it is not for the money. It's just because it's darn fun. It's fun for us to do, and it's a showstopper, and we like that kind of thing.
Well, you know, if Randy really was so confident that he can easily dispatch anybody who makes claims of the paranormal or whatever, then I have always wondered why he is so chicken as to not come on the program. Chicken, chicken, chicken! In fact, didn't I once invite him on with respect to you? Wasn't it with you?
Yeah, I think it was.
It was.
Art,
it was.
But, yeah. I think he was too busy trying. I think he was upset that his backers were pulling out, that he wouldn't have been able to have the pledges that he needed because people were pulling out because they found out who was taking the challenge, who picked up the gauntlet.
Randy. He's tortured me over the years, so I don't mind returning it. I mean, really, we are the largest program of its type by about 600% or 1,000% above anything else that's running, and so he'd have every reason to come on here, but...
Come on.
Listen, hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour, Ed. When we get back, we'll take up the Shadow People. You said that was pretty rough one. The Shadow People was a rough one, huh?
That was a rough one, Art. That beat me up pretty badly. But we got it. We did it, and you'll be impressed. It's very, very exciting. Very exciting stuff.
All right. Well, stay right there. Exciting is right. The Shadow People, whatever they are real. We've got a real bone-chilling picture on the website right now of one of the Shadow People attacking a young man. At least that's certainly what it looks like. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Morning.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 8th, 2001.
To burst up through tarmac to the sun again. or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. All these things in our memories haunt, and they use them to help us.
Listening to Art Bell's Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 8th, 2001.
Remote viewing is the real deal, and Major Ed Dames is the real deal. Very controversial, to be sure. Said some pretty wild things, and we'll talk about some of those as the night wears on, no doubt. But coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about one of his tougher assignments, the Shadow People. Just before we take off on the Shadow People, which is coming up, there's something I've been wanting to say, so I'll say it now, because I'm going to make Ed do a plug for his product. You all should know, well, whether you believe it or not, what I'm about to tell you is the dead center truth. And that is, when we have guests on the show, which we do on a frequent basis, you know, people who have written books or people who have products for sale, as is the case with Ed, and he's got a wonderful new remote viewing product, you all should know that neither my network nor myself ever get one penny from it, nor any penny from anything that's sold here other than what's advertised on the program on our own behalf. Otherwise, whenever any guests come on, we, as a consideration for their valuable presentation here on the air, allow them to advertise whatever it is they have, be that a book, a videotape, a remote viewing project, whatever it might be. So, no, that's true. People have wondered about that for years. Well, Bell must be getting rich off those books or those remote viewing products or whatever. Wrong. Absolutely, totally, 100% of the time, wrong. So, with that in mind, Ed does have a wonderful product. If you're curious about your remote viewing skills or those of your children, but I think mostly yourself, you're really going to love this. You're just going to love it. I think it's the best product he's had out yet. Ed, what's it called?
It's called Mind Dazzle, Art. Yep.
It is.
It's a remote viewing training kit. It's a result of 20 years of my experience and all of the knowledge that we had as a military team piled into the most beautiful work of art that you've ever seen. And it is a remote viewing as a hobby. If you want to learn it as a profession, you go to the TRV Institute. But if you want to do this as a hobby and have a load of fun and prove to yourself that there's a whole universe inside of you, then buy Mind Dazzle, the remote viewing training kit.
What's in Mind Dazzle, Ed? Tell them what's in it.
There is what is most important in Mind Dazzle, other than the fact that it's a work of art by an award-winning designer.
It is.
Ben Lizardi. He's a master craftsman. It is a very terse, elegant protocol, a set of instructions that allows you, within 3 minutes of time, to be a remote viewer. 3 minutes to describe one of 180 sealed, hand-sealed, in black envelopes, photographic targets. And that's what's in this box.
So in other words,
with instructions
on how to do it. So in other words, you take out one of the envelopes, that is your target, and you can actually test your ability quite readily and continue to do it and try to improve it with Mind Dazzle, right?
That's right. You put it in this beautiful little holder, and you start the timer, and it's all in this elegant black, so you don't have anything bright in front of you to interfere with bright colors, and off you go. And in 3 minutes, we teach you, using this a very special, very patented way of exploring your own conscious awareness, how to lock on to a target that's described by one of these 180 sealed envelopes. There's no way you can see through this opaque envelope. And we teach you how to truly remote view, and it is fun.
All right. How much is Mindazzle?
$89.95 plus shipping.
$89.95. Well within everybody's reach. And where, pray tell, can they get Mindazzle?
You can go to the Mindazzle training website via Art Bell's website and for more information and see what it looks like. Take a look at the pieces.
Yeah, we've got a link up there right now.
Yeah, that's MindazzleTraining.com. Or you can go to my remote viewing training, the technical remote viewing training site, and that's remoteviewing.la.
Remoteviewing.la, huh?
Yeah.
All right, Ed, hold on for a moment. Let me just briefly set this up, painful as it may be for some. Shadow people are what people are calling these things that they used to see out of the corner of their eye, their peripheral vision. You know, every now and then I think we've all experienced that, where you see a movement in your peripheral vision, you go, kind of turn around, what was that? Well, I began getting calls from people who were seeing these things, and then I began to get calls from people who were seeing them full on, not just the little peripheral vision movement, but seeing them full on. These dark forms that resemble humans to a degree have a humanoid-like shape, kind of, in some cases, and resemble other things at other times. But the fact of the matter is, I began receiving, thousands and thousands now, countless, maybe 10,000 by now, emails from people who have seen these creatures full on. The latest installment, and it's pretty wild stuff, is on my website right now. And if you have not yet seen it, you're welcome to take a look. It involves a young lady named Amy, who called my program on him. Now, we have, by the way, so that you might know, we noticed that Amy on her website smudged out her son's face a little bit. So without her even asking us to do so, because she did send me the email and told me on the air to go ahead and post it, we put it up originally, but we have now smudged out his face a little bit. We did that just for his own protection. She writes, "My name is Amy. I have an 11-year-old son. He tells me he sees things at night, sometimes during the day. He has many problems that just seem to be getting worse. He sees a psychiatrist and is on 5 different medications that do not seem to be working. The doctor thinks he has schizophrenia. I'm beginning to think that he is not hallucinating, but really seeing things that really are there. I took this picture of him about 2 weeks ago. I see a skeleton laying on top of him, with a hand reaching out to his face. Look at the picture sideways. This is the 4th picture in a series of 4. You can go to my website, and we've got a link there, and see all 4 pictures. And this creature appears in the series of pictures to be crawling up his body. It is bone-chilling. She continues, "I'm very worried about him, and I'm disturbed with what I captured on film. I also showed my son your shadow people pictures." These are pictures that people drew of what they saw. "And he picked out about 4 pictures that he says he has seen. Any information or any help would be greatly appreciated. I'll be listening to your show tonight. Thank you, Amy." She provides this picture of her son lying on the bed at a very odd angle with his head hanging off the bed on a pillow. You know, the way some young people sleep is pretty strange. And, oh my God, there is this thing crawling up his body. I just wanted you to know the little smudging we did on his face. We did, actually at my request, after I found out she had done it on her website, even though she was not asking us to do it. Obviously, we've got the big exposure, so at my request, we went ahead and smudged his face a little bit, which otherwise was clear. It's not relevant to what's on his body. And that, my friend, is bone-chilling. It may or may not be one of what we call the shadow people. All I know is we have stumbled into something gigantic. Some have said so. And so I asked Major Ed Dames to take a look at the whole shadow people thing. And with that set up, so you now know, here's Ed once again. Ed, so how'd you go about this?
Well, I feel pretty drained, like I'm almost a shadow of my former self. But I went about it by I received many letters that were for that you shunted my way to the Technical Remote Viewing Institute. Many of your listeners sent letters my way and asked me to look at each of these sundry and varied experiences that they described. I sorted through those and I took a cross section. And I sorted through the cross section. I selected out several different instances and used those as remote viewing targets and set the targets up in a very technical way that I don't want to go into at this moment. I do want to make a distinction, though, between there is something that you and others are seeing and have photographed in terms of the shadow form. I'm going to talk about that momentarily and what causes it. That was a very difficult target, but we got that.
Why was it difficult, or is that something you want to cover later?
It is difficult because many years of experience to be able to discern what is happening in terms of this paranormal experience because it doesn't meet the norms for what remote viewers are trained to do. Remote viewers are trained to accurately, in great detail, describe a remote target, whether it's a technical thing or a pyramid or something like that.
Sure.
Physical thing.
Sure.
When it comes down to these transient phenomena that are outside the bandwidth of normal operating vision or bicameral brain processing, that is a very difficult thing to do, and one must have experience with paranormal things to begin with in order to have a basketful, a toolbox of labels
mm-hmm.
and concepts
again,
to handle this.
Again, some kind of frame of reference.
Some kind of frame of reference, and people who have not experienced these kinds of things and not worked against them do not have that frame of reference. So having said that, let me make a distinction here between two, before I talk about your shadow people, okay? That's Trevor. The photo that you have on your website of this child,
yes,
11-year-old boy, that is not a shadow person on him.
What is it?
That is a poltergeist.
Oh, my.
Now, a poltergeist is this. The classic poltergeist art is a prepubescent child, 11, 12, 13.
Right.
If you want to guarantee poltergeist activity where you'll see a tremendous amount of energy that is projected out from the child, then that child would be a 13-year-old epileptic girl who is undergoing a seizure. At that moment, there is a tremendous amount of energy, and this is recorded and documented by people in paranormal. Amount of energy is tremendous, and you can actually see a black form. It takes in the eye, visually, humans can pick up a black form, and this is a poltergeist. This is energy, so to speak, and I won't go into all the details in parapsychology. This is energy that belongs to that child. It's an extension of themselves.
You're saying this energy that we see is actually coming from the mind of this child?
No, it's coming from the body of the child, Art, not the mind. It's part of the body of the child, and it's an extension of that child's energy. Very apparent when you have a schizophrenic person, a child particularly, the poltergeist activity is very apparent in prepubescent and pubescent children,
wow.
Especially epileptics.
I'd never considered that as my.
And in Trevor's case, if he could get off of the drugs, that would be helpful. But if he's still undergoing schizophrenia, you're still going to have poltergeist activity up until the time he's about 14 years old. Then it will go away. And that's what happens.
Well, I can tell you that most people that have responded to me about this have said totally creeps them out. I mean, you look at this picture and you go, whoo, like that.
Yeah, it's not... It is paranormal, for lack of a better word, and it is creepy. But it is an extension of ourselves in abnormal circumstances. It is not normal.
Hmm.
Okay. it, to a certain degree, all children pass through this phase, and there is an extension of the sexual energy and the psyche, and it's projected outward. But in the case where people have wiring problems, schizophrenia,
sure,
epilepsy, it is greatly amplified, greatly amplified, and you will actually see a black fuzzy ball projected outward from the person.
And
it can be photographed.
Can I ask you anything about the nature of this projection or this poltergeist? In other words, can something like this actually harm a child, or will, since a child is in effect projecting the energy that allows it, would it? I'm not even sure of what I'm asking, Ed. I guess I'm asking if it can be dangerous in any way.
No, it doesn't have a mind of its own. It's just energy. It can be dangerous only to the extent that, in certain cases, I mean, knives and forks and spoons have flown across the room.
Right.
Because the energy has lifted it up.
That's right.
It may have a magnetic component that we don't understand. I certainly don't understand it. But I know what its origin is and its source.
All right, whatever it is, and you have described what it is, this poltergeist on Trevor is not a shadow person.
It is not. I'm going to talk to you about shadow people.
How long a project is it to sit down and look at something as tough? And you told me privately on the phone before the program that the shadow people was a really rough project. How long a project is it until you're comfortable that you've got the real answer?
Well, I'll give you an example. The underwater images that we determined was actual physical artificial structures off the coast of Cuba underwater.
Right.
That's a matter of 40 minutes. In 40 minutes, that's a very simple target, 40 minutes. The cause of an airline crash.
Yeah, I suppose it's
2 hours.
2 hours. Okay, well, it's the underwater city thing is a classic RV target. So easiest of the bunch, huh?
Yes.
A real thing. You're trying to you're not imagine, God. You're trying to perceive, duplicate on paper what really is down there. But it's a real thing, just like you're looking for a gas canister, which you did in the military for in Iraq. It's a real thing. So piece of cake compared to,
yes, compared to this one. In fact, one could not even tackle this. Even as a you would have to be a teacher, an actual technical remote teacher, go all the way through the Institute's courses in order to handle something like this. It is not easy. It's not a beginning technical remote viewing project like the underwater structures are. They're very easy to do.
Now, on more difficult projects, Ed, do you use others as well as yourself, or is it a solo effort?
No, I have to in most cases, unless we're dealing with paranormal types of things where There's very few people out there that have that kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And there, either I have to do it myself, or I must be in a room with someone while they're working blind in order to see what's going on. In this case, I have to admit, I worked it myself for over a six-day period.
6 days?
6 days at an hour and a half a day.
Huh. How, maybe we'll find out after we find out what they are, but I'm wondering how that progresses. An hour and a half on day one, and you've come how far?
I'll tell you what it's like, Art. It's
yeah.
like working, think about working, did you ever take a college math course?
Sure.
Okay, think about working a calculus problem, where you sit down and
uh-huh.
it's just a pain in the neck. And you sit down one night with a cup of coffee, and you can't make heads or tails. You sit down the next night, you do it again, and you do it again.
About
the fourth or fifth day, you finally start to get it, and then the sixth day, it pops in.
That's
it. Just like that. Just like that. The more time you spend, and the more effort it's applied, it pays off. But you have to have the fundamental understanding about what you're doing.
Is it at a linear chain? In other words, where the work you did on the first day is a little piece of the puzzle, and then the second day is more of a piece of the puzzle, until finally it clicks all together at the end, or do
yes.
you take a wrong, yes?
Yes, generally speaking, it's like that. It overlays one piece on top of the other until the pattern emerges. It's unlike our normal types of targets that we teach. Other normal types of targets are cut and dried. The pieces just fit together immediately as they become apparent. But in this case, it's a very difficult problem.
All right. When we get back, which will be in a moment, we really will get to the shadow people, but I guess we did have to delineate between the picture of Trevor, as unsettling as it is, and Shadow People, which are yet to come. Hey, Randy. Randy. Somebody email Randy and said I said, tell him I said he's chicken. We'll be right back, and when we are, it's the Shadow People.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 8th, 2001. Presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired June 8th, 2001.
And as you know, I've had much to say about the weather for a long time now. It's worsening. The worsening of the weather has already begun. The changing of the weather has already begun. The warming of the planet is well underway. Hannah in Houston, where the first storm of the season continues relentlessly to pound that part of Texas. Hannah says, downtown Houston is going under, Art. The rain continues. The jail is taking on water now. The local CBS affiliate off air with 4 feet of water inside. That's Hannah in Houston. You know, that storm literally was detected as it began. I don't know if you know that or not, but that storm was detected as it began. The weather is something we'll get to with Ed on down the line here a little bit. Coming up next, Shadow People. All right. The Shadow People, a six-day remote viewing project. Once again, here is Major Ed Dames. Ed, welcome back. All right.
Thank you.
Shadow People.
Well, when we, as remote viewers, when we tackle a project, Art, it's much better to have a chain of custody, to achieve chain of custody against a discrete target.
Of course.
By that, what I did in the case of Shadow People, after screening many of the examples and looking at the similarities, I chose one specific moment, one event, as my target that was representative of a wide class of phenomena. Now, what I mean by this is that all the Shadow People related emails that I was sent, many of them were forwarded from you, they, not all of them were necessarily the same phenomenon. They were, there were different classes of phenomena. But most of them were these two-dimensional shadow-like forms that were moving along walls. That's the type, that's the class a phenomenon that I chose to concentrate on, and the one I think that you mean when you talk about shadow forms. It was the majority of the emails. So the specific target that I chose was an event that was described by someone who emailed you, and you posted, I think Keith posted this letter on your website on the 29th of May from a former Ranger.
Oh, yes. Ranger. Yes, yes.
And so because I guess a comrade in arms, former comrade in arms, spotting one of these, and Rangers don't lie. So I chose this as a specific example, or someone who really wondered what he saw.
Sure.
And what he saw was this true shadow person, something moving along the wall, disappearing into the corner.
Right.
Disturbed him. What a shadow form is, Art, is just that. It is a shadow, nothing more. It does not have a mind of its own. It's a shadow. Do you know what it's a shadow of?
No, that's the big question. What is it a shadow of?
Well, in order to have a shadow, you have to have backlighting,
right?
That's
right. Yes, of course.
It's a shadow of a ghost.
A shadow of a ghost?
Yes, the shadow of a ghost. There's a ghost present that is backlit. The ghost is interfering with space. So, therefore, it interferes with light. Light doesn't pass through it like it does the rest of the room. There's a ghost present when you have a shadow form on the wall. But people are attracted to the shadow because it's black and dark.
How about because it's what we can see?
Well, it's the thing that you can see most.
And I'm not saying that people don't occasionally see ghosts, but
well,
maybe they more occasionally see the shadow of ghosts.
Almost always they see the shadow, which really begs the point. It appears, and in my work here, I realize now that from all of these reports, that ghost must be a much more common phenomena than we think. Which I'm now turning my studies to.
Yeah, I understand. Ed, I'm curious. I sent emails your way last time we had a program. I sent you email Ed. How many emails did you get?
I got about 200, 300, something like that.
Yeah, there you are. From one night of show, 200 or 300 emails. So it's a really, really common. I got thousands of emails, Ed. It's an incredibly common phenomenon now.
But this means, for the people who have really seen the shadow form on a wall, that there really is a ghost, what we call a ghost present. I don't mean poltergeist, I mean a ghost. And the ghost is interfering with light. There has to be backlighting. In other words, you're not going to see a shadow form if there's no light.
Would you like to define ghost for me? Is a ghost, in your estimation, the remnants, the soul, or the spirit of what once was a human?
Art, I don't know yet. I honestly don't know. I now want to know. I'm so fascinated with the phenomenon itself. Now that I've found out what these shadow forms are, now my attention is naturally drawn. It begs the question, what is a ghost? And I'd like to, I'd really like to find out. I do know one thing, though, as a result of the last day's work on this project a couple of days ago when I resolved this, what these images were. Ghosts do not have a mind. They are not connected with a mind. They're just an energetic presence.
An energetic presence.
So, and how they arise, I do not know. And number two is, I would like that there was a project. Let me digress here for a moment. A number of years ago, a very prominent figure hired me to put together a scientific team and go to a place where remote viewing had determined was a very hot zone for UFO activity,
right,
so that we could set up instrumentation and validate the existence of the phenomenon and perhaps record some parameters.
Right.
I would like to do that, to use remote viewing to not only to describe the conditions under which ghosts, whatever they are, appear, the energetics behind their appearance, and to set up the equipment to actually measure that, to actually.
All right. Well,
I don't want to say trap or bait them, but maybe we can do that too.
All right. I still haven't fully figured out. In other words, to have a shadow, you have to have, at least as we understand shadows, you have to have form, right?
That's correct.
But in this case, we appear to have the shadow without form. That is to say, the solid form producing the shadow.
It's not a solid form, Art, but it is something that is interfering with the passage of light. It's an energy presence. It actually is an energy, but think of a bunch of neutrinos that were just kind of loosely scattered in the room. The light would hit them, and then it would create all kinds of optical effects that would result in the shadow, right?
A lot of people have been saying, one of the letters that I found very compelling, Ed, was somebody who said that he has begun to see them, and that he works with high frame rate, high tech stuff, you know, TVs running or monitors running very high frame rates, and that he believes that this actually accounts for people beginning to see what they have not previously seen.
I think that this might be. Indeed the ticket. We've noticed that Jose Escamilla has suggested that a similar effect.
You're darn right.
The result of all of a sudden rods. Rods are popping up on film too, because we have technology that's fast enough to record these images. In fact, and I can't speak about it because it's classified, but some of our photo reconnaissance satellites in the 80s and 90s were picking up. The cameras were very fast in the old satellites, the KH satellites.
That's right.
And they were picking up on a couple of frames these glowing objects, these UFOs.
Oh, really?
Yes. Now, the reason the American public is not privy to those objects are mostly because it would show what we're interested in terms of a military target, and with the giveaway. Although it's kind of antiquated now, it's still classified. It would give away the operational capabilities of the cameras in those days. We have much more sophisticated systems now. Nevertheless, the most that the American public could get would be a sketch, an artist's rendition of what one of those things looked like that was captured on a.
I'm not clear though, Ed, on how something without form produces what you call a real shadow. It's energy that is at a frequency that we're not seeing this, in quotes, ghost that's producing the shadow.
It's just outside the bandwidth of human vision. In fact, dogs and some animal, birds and dogs can pick up. It seems to the artifact of the presence, the signature of the presence of one of these other ghosts.
Oh, I think that's absolutely correct. Yes,
appears to bleed into the low ultraviolet so that you can just barely detect it out of the corner of your eye.
Uh-huh.
And it's interfering with, it's actually, because there's a presence there, there is some mass. There's some actual a coalescence of some type of it with the mass that's in the room.
So then because of the nature of the frequency, we're seeing the shadow before the form, and if we could move in frequency far enough, we would see the form itself. We would see what is producing the shadow.
No, I'm saying just look over to the wherever the source of the light is.
Yes.
Because it's the ghost is between the shadow and the light. Whatever the source of lighting is in the room, the ghost is there.
Well, you just made a lot of people not all that happy, probably.
No, because I think it suggests that ghosts are a much more common phenomenon than we think, and we are here to force suspect,
well,
at least
then
with me.
The next big question for you, Ed, is going to be, obviously, what is a ghost? Is it the residual energy from a human life now gone, now extinguished, the physical life?
Is the one that is begged, and I would like to look at that. I would like to look at that indeed, and I will.
Okay, so then do you agree that, and I think I heard you agree, that all of this high-tech stuff that we've got with these high frame rates and flicker rates and all the rest of it is what is enabling us now to see these shadows? Because I don't have a lot of reports, Ed, of people seeing shadows and ghosts, just of shadows, not of the form part. Now, you may say, well, okay, look between the source of light and where the shadow is for the ghost, but I don't have reports of people seeing the ghost, so...
Because they're attracted to the shadow itself, Art. The actual interference of the thing that is interfering with the light is not really easy to see. It's spread spectrum. It's spread out.
Well, then the shadow must be easier to see than the energy producing it.
That's what I'm saying. The shadow is easier to see than the cause of the shadow that's in between the light and the wall. That's why these things look like they're moving along the wall and disappearing, get bigger and larger. You ever read the book Flatland?
Yeah, well, yes.
Yeah, this is a whole world of a theoretical world where it's two-dimensional. All the creatures that live there are dots. All their whole world is lying.
Okay, another great commonality that people talk about with respect to these shadow people is when the humans seeing these things see them. The shadow people almost seem shocked or disturbed greatly that they have been seen, and they usually take off like crazy.
Well, they look like they're taking off like crazy, but that's because the actual presence, the ghost itself, is moving away from the wall, and it looks like they disappear or it moves sideways, and that motion is amplified.
And the shadow, oh, well, sure it would be with a shadow.
And it looks like the shadow is moving like a bat out of hell, when in reality it's this three-dimensional presence that's creating the two-dimensional shadow that's moving away.
Uh-huh.
But the three-dimensional presence, which is the ghost, is not a normal mass that we're used to that causes a shadow, like a balloon, for instance. Think of a balloon. A balloon in the room, a child's balloon you blow up.
Yes.
A balloon casts the shadow on the wall.
That's right.
And a balloon is very light, is very membranous, and even if the balloon were transparent in color,
yes,
if it were transparent indeed, it would still cast a shadow, Art. And it might be difficult, the shadow may become more prominent on the wall than the balloon itself. You look over in the middle of
absolutely.
The room and you would look right through the balloon and maybe not see it,
yep.
But you would indeed see the shadow.
Oh, that's a very good point.
And that's what these ghosts are. They're just out, and the way they are mass, they do have form, albeit not solid, but the spectrum that they're visible in, it's just outside the range of human vision.
Must
the
be.
Dog can pick it up. That's why dogs track something across the room and you're wondering, what is the dog looking at?
Yep.
And the dog puts its head back down and goes to sleep.
Cats certainly do it too.
Yes, and birds also, by the way.
Well, yeah, okay, I guess I can buy all of that. I think the surprise would be, I mean, ghost reports, by virtue of their numbers, are very small, Ed, compared to the kind of numbers of shadow being reports that we've had. But if in fact what you say is true, and these shadow beings represent the shadows or the presence of ghosts, as yet to be defined by you, then there's a whole lot more ghosts than anybody ever thought.
And the value of technical remote viewing is to be able to qualify how a ghost arises, how it moves, and what it is, and to be either set up the conditions that attract this phenomenon, or to go to a place, as we did in terms of the UFO events, to go to a hot zone where they find it using technical remote viewing, where we can always go and see ghosts, and they are set up equipment.
Maybe almost everywhere is a hot zone for these things. That's, I guess, what I was saying, that they're so common that maybe they're virtually all around us, kind of like Mr. Escamilla's rods, which you did a reading on. And in a lot of ways, you said rods were real. Rods were virtually beings or life sharing the planet with us, yes?
Correct. They're some type of life form that we haven't detected then.
But there are similarities to the way rods are detected or seen and the way shadow people are detected and or seen. There are some similarities, aren't there?
Yes. The one dissimilarity that I've noticed is the size. The presence of a ghost is usually a larger form.
True.
And it's much slower, moves much slower.
True, again.
A rod is small and moves fast.
That is quite correct.
But the spectra in which they are seen is generally overlaps, and that is low ultraviolet.
Right you are again. All right, well...
So we can, knowing this and using technical remote viewing data results, we can design equipment which are cheap and point it in the right direction to make more measurements, not only to detect these things, but to record them and understand them more.
You're saying that shadow people are not, they do not represent a mind.
The shadow forms are the shadow of a ghost.
Uh-huh.
And a ghost apparently does not have a mind.
A ghost does not have a mind.
It is not connected with the mind as we know it. There's an energy presence there. And I mean, this flies in the face of the idea that ghosts appear to be interacting with humans mind to mind. It looks like they're looking at you and moving away. But in fact, there's no mind there. There's an energy, sort of an emotional energy presence, but there's no thinking involved. The mind's gone, but the presence is there.
Huh.
So we can, by turning our attention to this phenomenon and actually studying it and sitting down with some technicians, we can either bait something and attract this. Who knows what they're attracted to, but we're going to find out using remote viewing. If they're not attracted to anything in particular, at least we can find the zones, the hot zones, where we can go and where the likelihood of seeing a ghost over and over and over again is very high.
Would you, if you could, Ed, try to trap one of these, whatever they are?
Yes, I would do that because I don't think it's unethical to do so, because we're not dealing with a living thing. If it were a living thing, I wouldn't do that. But here, we're just dealing with a phenomenon or an epiphenomenon, and I don't see any ethical or problems whatsoever. Yes, I would put one in a box.
Although you cannot fully yet understand whether you might have an ethical dilemma until you really find out what a ghost is, though minus a mind, whatever it is, there still might be an ethical dilemma when you figure out what it is, right?
Maybe. But right now, I see it as just sort of an epiphenomenon.
But now, right now, no problem putting it in a box if you could.
I would do that. Do that with a person's soul.
Do you think there's any... Well, do you think there's any chance, Ed, that you will be able to get one in a box?
We're going to have to study this. I'm going to call in my A-team. We're going to sit down and we're going to grab, for instance...
I think you would, Ed. We got to go. We will be back. We'll talk a little bit about the weather. I'm telling you, they're saying they're going underwater in Houston. It's just one current example. And by the way, our affiliate in Houston is off the air covering what's going on down there. That's how serious it is. But we'll talk about the weather and what's happening in a minute with Major Ed Dames. Well, a few minutes, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 8, 2001.
Though I smiled the tears inside were burning, I wished him luck and then he said goodbye. He was gone but still his words kept returning. What else was there for me to cry? Will you believe that yesterday?
Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 8, 2001.
Major Ed Dames is here. We've talked about several critical things already and a whole lot of surprises already. Coming up, we're going to have a little talk about our weather. They know all about Houston, where our affiliate has broken away from normally carrying this program to carry information on what's happening around Houston, where they're just more or less going underwater from a system that's more or less just sitting right over them and has been and went virtually undetected till it happened. As our weather continues to get stranger and stranger, even U.S. News and World Report February 5th edition said it well on the cover. It just simply said, scary weather.
Oh,
we go. We're about to take on the sound, the weather. I just want to ask about it, Ed, because it's really getting bad. The weather extremes in this country right now are as they have never been before. The concern about global warming in all scientific reports I'm now reading. In fact, I read earlier today the president is now prepared to get on the global warming bandwagon. President Bush, of all people, Mr. Coal and Oil, now says he's going to get on the way. He read the last presidential approval ratings. And in the environmental areas, he didn't do too well. So anyway, he's on board, he says, now. And it appears to be pretty scary and pretty real. And I know you've done some work on our weather, Ed. It seems to be changing awfully fast now, Ed. What does that mean?
In the short term, in terms of a technical remote viewing survey, geophysical survey of what's going on weather-wise, over the last eight or nine years of work, we've seen that there's a tremendous the linkage between the sun, Earth's sun,
right,
and our weather is really not has really not been understood by meteorology, and only now is beginning to be recognized. It reminds me in a way of the unconscious. The unconscious up until the early 60s was eschewed as having any bearing whatsoever on psychology. So it sort of reminds me of that in my own field.
Okay.
But the sun, and now we're in a solar max, and there is a very, very great linkage, a flux between the sun and Earth's weather. So you have these short-term changes that are really not understood. Lots of energy being pumped into the Earth's atmosphere,
yep,
in addition to global warming. But in the long term, we've got a very serious situation, and you have really written about it in the coming global superstorm. These long-term changes are a result of Earth's diminishing ozone layer. As I've mentioned before, not only is there an increasingly larger seasonal ozone hole that's resulting in lots of weather surprises, but what science doesn't understand, and actually what some meteorologists do know, and they are not saying it to the public, is that not only is there an ozone hole, but there is a metastasis of the ozone layer around the rest of the globe.
That's
that nobody's
absolutely
telling
correct.
You about.
No, it's correct. And I think that we've seen, I'm trying to remember how many percent change over North America, which equates to the rest of the world pretty much, but it was several percent. And with each percent, I'm recalling that skin cancers go up by some percent. And it's really getting pretty bad pretty fast. And you're right, they don't talk about that. They talk about the hole like it's somewhere else. Don't worry about it. Wrong.
Well, I would put antenna up and watch for the following. And if for real perceptive people, you might suspect that if science is aware, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, in conjunction with NASA and the Department of Defense, is aware that there is a very big problem out there. If that problem becomes one of national security,
yes,
ironically, where ecology becomes a national security issue,
yes,
and that's happening now. I have inside information.
I know you do.
And at that, you might see classified projects to manipulate, I won't use the word term manipulate, that's too strong, to attempt
not
to
really
ameliorate and mitigate those conditions. So
well, you can't change the conditions without trying to affect the weather. I mean, let's face it. It's these conditions we're worried about, so they have to be manipulating. That's not an overuse of that word. They have to be in some way manipulating the process that's causing the weather.
Well, I would never have imagined a point, or in my life, I would have never imagined a situation where ecology, global ecology, would become a national defense issue, and yet we are now faced with that. And so you might expect to see some classified or sense, let's say, use that word, some classified projects that concern themselves with reestablishing homeostasis or equilibrium at certain levels of the atmosphere.
Let me ask you a question, Ed.
Shoot.
This comes real close to what you can't talk about and never have talked about on this program.
You're going to bring up chemicals?
Wait, jump. What I'm going to ask, though, now, don't say a word yet, please. Would it surprise you to know that a lot of people believe that chemtrails are an attempt to manipulate our weather? Would it surprise you to know a lot of people believe that?
No, it would not.
Okay. All right. The question on a lot of minds out there, I mean, if things continue as they are now, for example, Ed, farming will begin to move from the temperate zone it resides in now in the U.S. and Canada north. I mean, that's one certainly one possible outcome, and agriculture is going to suffer, leading to perhaps a lot of the hunger that you saw not that far down line for us.
It's been about 4 years since I started doing your show, and the first time I was ever on your show, I talked about a contract that my former company did. My former company was made up of in the best and the brightest from the military remote viewing team that I hired. I trained them, you know, I hire them, I fire them.
Right.
In fact, many of those people will be showing up at the International Remote Viewing Conference in Las Vegas near your neck of the woods on June 15th to 17th.
That's right. You're going to be there?
I won't be there, but my colleague F.M. Bonzel will be there, and the creator, the designer of Mindazzle will be there. Anybody who wants to see this kit and use it and have first-hand experience, that will be there. But many of my old cronies will be there.
Oh, yeah, the all-stars of remote viewing.
That's
right. About it.
That's right. People I had hired in the original company, the founder of the International Remote Viewing Association, is one of my students. So these are all people that know me well.
I've been hearing a lot about the conference, just over the hill from me.
It's a good thing Dr. Mitchell will be there. Edgar Mitchell will be the keynote speaker.
Right.
And so it's a very good thing. I encourage people to go to it and meet some of the principals involved in the remote viewing community.
All right. The weather.
Back to the weather.
Yeah, the weather. Where is there any way to tell, Ed, where the least affected areas will be? In the fairly near term. I mean, people always want practical information if they can get it. So where would be a better place to be than not?
The better places appear to be in the southern hemisphere.
Really?
Rather than the northern hemisphere in terms of food. Because the northern hemispheres are going to be subject to many more vicissitudes of weather change. And the southern hemispheres appear in terms of remote viewing over the horizon indicator and warning information that we have. We did a contract for Lawrence Rockefeller when he ran the Human Potential Foundation.
Oh, Lawrence Rockefeller.
Yes, years ago. My remote viewing team was contracted by him to study the ozone problem.
Mm-hmm.
We did a contract called Atmospheric Ozone Depletion, Projected Consequences, and Remedial Technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And the results of that contract were there are no remedial technologies, the ozone layer is going. And in about 50 to 100 years, Earth is going to suffer tremendously as a result of that. And there will no longer be seasons.
Like now, you know, the scientists that are saying that the ozone layer will replenish itself when we stop putting CFCs by the tonful into the atmosphere, why there would be a period of time, the scientists said, and then the ozone would begin to replenish itself. Well, the holes are getting bigger and bigger still. Nobody's seen any replenishment yet, and you're saying they're not?
I stand by that. Negative. It's not going to happen. We are not going to be able to repair the damage in the ozone layer. It does not appear to be just a natural, periodic, cyclic thing in terms of geophysics. It appears that the damage, that if it is a cycle, that is, the ebb and the flow of the ozone hole, we have aggravated it, us humans have aggravated it to the point where it cannot and will not, according to remote viewing over the horizon work, will not reestablish equilibrium. Earth will not reestablish homeostasis, and the ozone layer will decay and degrade to the point where a tremendous damage will be done, and that damage will be primarily, the greatest amount of damage will be to the upper few feet of the ocean, phytoplankton, the very bottom of the food chain for the world. And that will start the very serious chain of events. Now, right now, you've seen over the years, I've been jumping up and down about frogs, eggs.
Yes.
Frogs and amphibians.
We talked about frogs years ago before the decimation of frogs began.
Right, and you see amphibians dying now because their eggs are exposed to higher levels of UV. They can't out of the way. They don't have umbrellas. They're not in the shade.
Correct.
But when the phytoplankton begin to die in the oceans, the very bottom of the food chain, that is the beginning of the end in terms of the ecosphere. That's ecocide at its grandest. And that is a result of the thinning of the ozone layer.
Ed, when you turned this report into Rockefeller, do you have any idea how it was received?
No, not really. Not really. We didn't get a lot of feedback on that. You know, we, you know, the contractor paid his money, and we turned the report in, and we went on to do other things. So.
Mm-hmm. But you stand by that?
I stand by it, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, well, other things that we've described are that because of the vicissitudes of weather, and I've said this on your program over the years, and now I think it's becoming immediately apparent, an in-your-face type of thing.
Yeah, I know.
We're not going to be able to raise food en masse like we used to raise it, regardless whether it's genetically engineered or not. We're just not going to be able to raise food without covering it and putting it in hermetically sealed biospheres. Mm-hmm. When we do that, and we need to start doing it soon so the technology can mature, because the weather's going to degrade even further, these big, big biospheres will actually become the templates for human habitats. Humans will begin to migrate into these farms as the weather begins to degrade. The wealthier countries will be able to afford to do this. The third world, the lesser developed countries, will not have the money to do this, but they will not be hit so hard, except in Africa and in the Middle East. But
North America is got an X for a target written right all over it, huh?
North America does, and the things you'll see first are the UK. The waters, and as I mentioned before, the fresh water in the UK will completely die. There'll be dead water in the UK. The water will be totally, because of both pollution and the results of depleted ozone over British Isles, you're going to see dead water in the UK. It's sterile water. And right there, that'll be the zone that gets hit the hardest the first.
And what's your best guess about when we'll start to see these serious events? I mean, there's one way of looking at it, and that is that already there are very serious events going on in the UK, mad cow disease, and other things striking them in the UK that just seem.
Okay.
Odd.
The key indicator.
Is there a relationship?
I'm not sure if there's a relationship between the current diseases, the bovine spongiform encephalopathy,
right,
and other things. But I will tell you what the touchstone here is: the canary in the mine. Almost a good analogy is the canary in the mine. When there's a gas leak, the canary keels over and you run.
That's right.
The heck out.
That's right.
Watch the depletion of bird species all around the world, from Argentina all the way up to the UK. You'll see an acceleration in the disappearance of species, the despeciation of birds, very, very rapid now. It'll be in a natural logarithmic curve. Species will begin disappearing so fast that you'll be able to count them month to month. That's when things are really becoming, when the decay is becoming rapid, when conditions are really speeding up. Birds, species will begin disappearing at much faster rates than they are right now. And I am not talking about disappearance as a result of deforestation.
Right.
And poisoning and pesticides. I'm talking about other things, because the bird's food is going to disappear. Insects are going to start dying.
Oh, that's right. The phytoplankton gone.
Mm-hmm. Particularly shorebirds and seabirds. They will starve to death. The seabirds will starve first.
Oh, this is pretty bad news, Ed.
But we've known it was coming. There's nothing new here, Art. We've just been in denial. That's all. We're going down. This is ecocide.
Yeah.
Let's not kid ourselves here.
I guess I haven't. Well, in a way I have. I'm like everybody else. Even as in my face, as it always is, you know, day-to-day life, Ed, goes on, and there are other things that you've got to tend to in life. And so
there's something worse.
You do that. Oh, something worse?
Yes, there's something worse.
Well, they didn't call you Dr. Doom for nothing.
There's something much worse.
Proceed.
In biblical prophecy, there is a time when man is beset by all these ills. And someone comes, springs up automatically. This person in Christian literature is called the false prophet. And the false prophet begins to work miracles and solve a lot, almost miraculously solve mankind's problems, and points the way and points over there and says, and points in the direction of a person, a human being.
Well, Ed, yes. If this person who you're describing, the Antichrist, if the Antichrist...
I'm describing the false prophet,
all right,
who points to the Antichrist.
Oh, all right. If this false prophet comes and begins to deliver mankind, or apparently is delivering mankind from extinction, then that person would be regarded as a real prophet indeed, right?
More than that, a miracle worker in addition to a prophet, yes.
So, I mean, it's after all,
2,500 years ago,
if we were all, Ed, if we were all facing death,
mm-hmm,
then there is no way we would not regard such a person for working miracles that would head off extinction, death, the worst case scenario, not just for us, but for all of mankind. At least when we pass, we have some idea that mankind shall continue.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody of that magnitude would indeed be considered a god.
That's correct. I agree with you fully. But there's a cost. There's a cost to be paid, and I need not say what that cost is. The scripture says what it is. There's a cost. You must receive the mark of the beast.
Oh, it's a usual cost, isn't it? Isn't that the loss of your soul?
Well, I don't want to go as far as to say that, but the cost is you must receive the mark of the beast. There's a mark. We've talked about this. You must receive this mark in order to, and this is what this kind of a seal will be, really sealing a person's fate.
Great. Well, you've said it every other way but saying it, and the basic deal is, we all know what the deal is, it's your soul.
Probably. Probably. I don't know what happens to your soul, but I don't think it goes the way it's supposed to go when this happens. So my point is that in as far as technical remote viewing of this situation, the false prophet is an extremely interesting, fascinating, key individual.
Well, I don't see how anybody's going to have any choice but to believe if they're saving our species and our planet. That's the most bottom line thing of all. Hold on. We'll be right back. Bottom of the hour. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from June 8, 2001. Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from June 8, 2001.
By the way, somebody fast blasts me a pretty profound thought on the ghosts, the shadow people, the shadows of these ghosts. This person comes to the following conclusion. Art, Ed, we were provided with a veil out of mercy. Sometimes bliss is ignorance. This, in fact, is one of those times. This is going to be really interesting, I think. It's it's going to be a really hard question for Ed. Hard question. Ed, you do have a rep, sort of a handle that you acquired over the years of Dr. Doom, because you present a lot of end-of-the-world type scenarios, things that you have seen that you've talked about, and this is the basis of my question. By the way, you're my kind of guy. I've read every End of the World book that has ever existed.
I don't think of it as the end of the world. I think it as an opportunity for character development.
All right. Character development on a big scale. We'll call it that. Whatever. Anyway, here's the hard question. I have interviewed, I think, almost all of your old colleagues and friends, and I can tell you that privately, most of them have a good, healthy respect for you and speak well of you, privately when they don't have to, by the way, on the phone. We try not to have remote viewers commenting on each other very much, just because it leads to internecine warfare, you know, the kind you see on the net all the time, and who needs that baloney? Tearing each other apart, it's not worth it. However, I do have this question, and it is as follows. Most of your colleagues, Ed, don't say the things you say with respect to really big stuff like our climate, like the ozone going away, like starvation, and they don't talk a lot about that kind of stuff, Ed. And the question, a natural question would be, why do you think they're silent on the matter? If they're good remote viewers, then they've probably seen what you have seen. And if they're at all curious, certainly they've listened to you on this program over the years, Ed, many of them, if not all of them. And having said what you've said, you would think they would have gone out of sheer curiosity and taken a look at a few of these same things and would speak out about them publicly, but they don't. I'm not speaking of any individual now, but of the other remote viewers collectively.
Well, many of the best remote viewers I took and hired and made a company of about 1990. So many of these, the military team members actually participated in the original projects. But I think that they're loath to talk about the results of it because it's so devastating and demoralizing to a great number of people. And I'm not, you know, I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to say, hey.
So then would it be your position, Ed, that they have, in fact, seen these things and know these things as well, but they are just loath to talk about it?
That's correct. I feel that they believe they can't do anything about it, and I believe that also. All I'm suggesting is that people don't go in denial about this and realize that, hey, this is right here. It's right on the horizon. These things are happening now, and it's going to get worse. Reorder your priorities right now while you have a chance, you know, and at home, in your own heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm suggesting, is that people really take a hard look at death and on a massive scale at grim stuff, and right now turn around and go inside. That's why this Mind Dazzle kit is so important to me, because it forces people to go inside themselves for the answers instead of listening.
Let's do it while we have a chance. One more quick plug for Mind Dazzle. Mind Dazzle is a way to find out, or actually not find out, but to develop the inherent talent that you have to remote view. And I too believe, and I do believe it's inherent talent that can be developed from almost anybody. I really do believe that. And this kit will, it'll kind of tell you where you are and lead you into it. And it's not very expensive, $89.95 for Mind Dazzle. And you'll really have fun with it. Actually, you'll have fun with it. If nothing else, it's a whole lot more fun than sitting down to a Ouija board.
Don't do it.
Don't do it, right. This kit has targets sealed in envelopes. How many targets?
180.
So you can really go to work. Actually, it might even be fun, although I guess the setting is wrong, at a party. I mean, who knows?
It is fun at the party.
Yeah, you could get somebody off in a room and begin to test their skills and compare everybody's skills. It'd be fun. So you can have a lot of fun with it. Mind Dazzle, $89.95 on the associated websites. Ed's websites are listed tonight. If you go to my website, the links are there. Otherwise, your website is what, Ed?
Remoteviewing.la.
.la. Remoteviewing.la. LA is a new thing, right? Like .com and .org and .gov.
Right.
LA is new. That's interesting. Okay. Can I assign you or intrigue you in a session?
Absolutely.
Of remote view? Okay.
Absolutely. If I can do it. Sometimes, you know, there we have limitations.
I know, but this is a good one.
Okay.
I had a show earlier in the week that has got to go down as a classic radio program of all time. It was with a man named Bugs, who is from Texas. He's down there now.
I had one of my students tell me about this show.
Okay. Bugs, I think everybody who listened agreed, was telling us a true story. He killed two of what he thought were Bigfoot, Ed.
This is how my students related this to me.
Yep, and buried them, Ed, mm-hmm. buried them. Bugs has sent me a map. I know Bugs' identity, and he sent me a map of where the bodies were buried. And he's concerned about the possibility that he might be charged with murder, should somebody go and dig these up. It's something running through his mind, and of course it would run through his mind. At the time he said they were half human, half something else. But they were human enough to scare him, and Bugs and his buddies buried these creatures. And we're in a dilemma right now about the whole thing. Is there a way that you can look at what Bugs buried?
Yes, we can do it pretty fast, Art. Is there a reference on your website in any form? Does Keith have anything up in any form?
No. Keith has some pictures, classic pictures of what people have said is Bigfoot, but nothing from Bugs specifically. I have that, Ed. I have his information. I have the map he drew me of where these bodies are buried.
Mm-hmm.
I know that would be enough, but I can't turn it over to you without his permission.
Oh, that's okay. I just wondered, that would make it a little bit easier for us, but no, it's not a problem. We could probably have an answer back for you in 5 to 7 days.
5 to 7 days. Well,
it could be faster, but it's just...
Be my guest. That's absolutely something I would love to have you look at.
Well, we'll do.
All right, good. What did you think of that quote that I read at the bottom of the hour? Somebody said, with respect to ghosts, that we were provided with a veil out of mercy. A veil.
Gave me a pause.
Sometimes bliss is ignorance. This is one of those times. In other words, that veil is there for a reason. We don't want to know what these ghosts, what these shadows of ghosts, we don't really want to know what they are because we won't like it.
It gave me pause. Sometimes when you hear somebody talk or say something, it goes to your head and you cogitate and intellectualize and ratiocinate and think about it. But this time it didn't go to my head. It went somewhere else and was, maybe she's got something.
Huh. Karen in Arizona wants to ask you what you know about the Antichrist, some of which you already told us. Is he among us now? Again, it's a sort of a timeline question, but it would be one that you would imagine a remote viewer could answer.
They are.
They?
Yes. These they are now toddlers. There's two or three of them. It's a pool of humans that are potential choices for the Antichrist. Bear with me for just a moment, if you will.
I will.
Okay. These are two or three children. They are alive today. They're potential candidates to be the Antichrist. The Antichrist will be unwitting, Art. But the false prophet will not be. I cannot overemphasize this false prophet. The false prophet will not be a human being. He will look like a human being, but he will not be one. He will arrive suddenly. The whole world will be astounded at this person, and he will point to the as he performs these miracles, people will gravitate toward him, and he will begin to point toward this person that will become a natural leader, a human, who will unwittingly be the Antichrist.
You know, again, Ed, there is something here I don't get. I understand the Antichrist, and I understand that most or all, you know, so many will be fooled. But, gee whiz, you know, if man, again, was facing the end of man, not just the end of any one life, my life or your life, but the end of everything, or very nearly so, then anybody who would come along who would, in effect, work miracles, put it in quotes, to fix the environment or whatever threatened our end, our virtual end, how would we not either worship that person or that entity as a god? How would we...
Well, let's put things in perspective.
How would we not be fooled?
I understand. At what cost, though? So as individuals, you and I perhaps, you know, nominally have maybe 30 years left of life. Just, you know, nominally.
No, that's probably right.
Yeah. So what happens when we die? Our souls are harvested off this planet. This is a garden. Our souls leave, everything else stays. So somebody is harvesting souls. There's a system out there. Let's just use operations research and system analysis and look at this. Somebody has planted this planet and is harvesting souls. You and I are going to be harvested, right? By some system. Now, it's the system. It's what the system wants that's important, not you and I as individuals, and it wants our souls. Now, there seems to be some competition for these, and that's all that I'm suggesting, period.
Well, I'm wondering, the way you have described the competition, Ed, how anybody is going to resist.
It will be irresistible. What I'm saying is run. Run like hell.
Oh, I think most students of the Bible are shaking their head yes and saying, yes, I know exactly what he's talking about.
But it's going to be very tempting. I agree with you, and especially us who are externally fixated and
but what do we associate miracles with if not God?
Well, you know, if you understand the system, if you can see what the mechanics and the dynamics and perceive what's going on, there really aren't any miracles per se. It's all natural. The supernatural is only super because it's invisible. That's where this idea of faith comes in. But as remote viewers, as a technical remote viewer, you get to see the system out there, whether it's invisible or not, and how it works, and what the dynamics and the mechanics are, and what the system standards and demands are, and then you get to choose. You're in more of a position to make a choice. That's all. I won't talk in terms of responsibility or duty or anything else, but you're in a better position. You're armed with more information with which to make a choice, period.
And behind this, I would take it, is His Eminence of the below place, Satan, Lucifer, which you remote viewed yourself, right?
If you remote view the concept of hell, it is associated with the idea of two things. One, this false prophet, the matrix, what we call the matrix, the collective unconscious where all information is stored, the patterns.
Yes.
When you go into this as a trained remote viewer, as a professional, and you look at the topic of hell, just as an idea.
Right.
You could look at Atlantis or Guinevere or Quetzalcoatl, the Inca sun god, but you go in with hell. What pops out is this false prophet that's on its way, and the idea of the murder and the torture of children. Those two things pop out of that search. By the way, there's a percentage of these mind dazzle sales go toward support my institute's Operation Goldeneye, which is funded by me. We search for child murderers right now. If you go to my website, you'll see.
You're very close to one, aren't you?
We have pinpointed. We know that one child was murdered on the night of her abduction. We have identified her murderer, and now we almost have a pinpoint location on her body. So the money from the sales goes to a dog, get our dog on the ground, and get us in place so we can dig her up with her father by her side.
You're going to do that.
Yes, we are. And that's why I don't talk about remote viewing. I'd rather do it, Art. I'd rather apply it and go out in the field and show people what we can do it and what a wonderful tool it is, rather than just talk about it. I'd rather just use the time and my resources to do this. And this is the choice.
But your discussions about remote viewing are not without tremendous benefit for an awful lot of people who don't know a darn thing about it. And you know, if some of the people in the listening audience could see what I have seen with regard to remote viewing, or maybe go to one of these big confabs like in Las Vegas, they would come away from it with a solid understanding that this is as real as anything around you. Remote viewing is real, demonstrated again and again and again and again. It does work.
It's a growing growing science.
CIA knew
that this.
That's right.
Consciousness but, might be a new industry.
But Ed, you can't understate the importance of educating the American people and beyond with the show about what this is, because it is real. And so they're finally that understanding it one of these days is really important. And when you talk about it, you impart that understanding. So that's not a trivial matter.
Well, I don't think I was suggesting that it was. If I did...
I know you'd rather be doing it than talking about it, but I'm trying to say talking about it so that eventually something is done is probably pretty important stuff.
Well, no, I don't mean... I enjoy doing your show. I've been doing it for 4 years, even before I had products to sell. I enjoyed doing the show in order to educate people about what remote viewing is and what it's not. So, but I do limit my public discussions pretty much to your show and a few special television programs now and then.
Yeah, I know. I know. I've always wondered about that.
Well, because I like to apply what we find in our workshops and in our classroom, take it out into the field.
But I mean, why restrict yourself to my program? You have done that over the years. It's quite true.
Yes.
Radio-wise, how come?
Quality.
I mean, you were doing that when I wasn't half the size that I am right now. We're rounding 500 affiliates here, and you were on way, way long ago, and you kind of stayed right here and didn't go elsewhere, and I know you had a million offers, so...
Yeah, substance over style. It go with a winning team, and it's quality, just quality. It's a quality show. I go with the quality.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
It's true.
You do understand, Ed... You do understand that when you say the things you say, which are very blunt and very worrisome and very concerning for everybody, that those who want to reject what you say, want to put their head in the sand, and when it comes to subjects like this, there are a lot of people who want to put their heads in the sand, understandably. They get angry. You know that.
Yes, I'm about ready to put my armor on and get all my bandages ready here.
Well, you get what you get, you know, but I do see a lot of that. I mean, you're a very controversial guy, and the people who don't like what you say, they get angry because they just don't want to face it, and it's much easier to say, oh, what a fraud, you know, what a fake.
Witness the turtle. It only makes progress by sticking its neck out.
Dead right. Ed, thank you.
My pleasure's mine, Art.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, all right, folks. That's all we've got time for tonight. As I mentioned to you, coming up on Monday night, there'll be a repeat as I take a day off. And that repeat will be a remarkable program to hear with Dr. David Anderson and one of the wildest shows I've ever done on the subject of time travel. It's one you don't want to miss. He's actually doing it now in the lab. I'm serious, and if you'll listen Monday night, you'll understand. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Ta-ta.